1212. That's episode 12, not 1-2. It's a 1-2 punch, though. Fire Pro Podcasting. Brad here, as always, with Dan Ford and Brian Rose. And I just don't know why. We're here for the next something. We're going to talk about Spring Stampede and talk about maybe some MMA.
Maybe.
I know. MMA on a wrestling podcast. We're the original ones. We're going to meld them together. These two fan bases, they don't talk. We're going to talk about them. But for now, I'm going to talk to Dan Ford. What's going on, man? What have you been up to? What's on your mind? What's on your brain?
Oh, man. College football weekend, big weekend for me. Saw some teams sort of shake out. Picture looking clear for the national championship. Go Oklahoma.
I always love when you talk about football because your accent just goes right up the roof. Like you're in Carolina mode. You're just like yep. Talk about football, and I'm fine with talking about football because the Sooners definitely they won last weekend. This weekend, whatever. It's Monday, so I guess last weekend. Last weekend.
Saturday.
Yeah. Whatever. They beat the Bears.
The Baylor Bears once again proving that if you schedule absolutely nobody. And then you finally got to start playing teams quite as prepared as the teams that played somebody, anybody. The School of the Blind did not prepare you for the Oklahoma Sooners.
Sometimes you can never tell. They always start really well, and then sometimes, I don't know. But they're doing well this time, and I can only hope they can do well. You know, gotta make old Jim Ross proud, you know.
The only football-related thing I could talk about is the GIF I saw today. Somebody running for a touchdown and somebody running after them, and the guy wasn't even remotely close, but he lunged toward him anyway, and he fell flat on his face. That was funny.
That's what you do to make like the defensive back coach happy. Yeah. Like, well, this guy, he gave effort. He tried all the way to the end. Look at him. He hit grass on his face.
It was a very good effort, but not even remotely close to being effective in any way.
It's like what your mom says. You know, it was a good effort to be here. Yeah. You did a really good job. Now let's go home. We'll get some ice cream. It'll be a great day.
An A for effort. Slices.
Or it's like, we'll go to get some pizza. You and me. And maybe that will show us. Not watch another game.
That's turning into a very sad scene now.
You know how it is. Dark humor, that's all I'm about.
Dad could not put up with your awful sports playing, so he left to go cheer for some other guys. It's just you and me now.
I, for one, outside of that football game, basically did nothing. I think, so Remembrance Day or Memorial Day, whatever, I don't know what you guys call it. Anyway, it was Remembrance Day here, where I live, the most important country, whatever, most important country in the world, me. So the way it works is, apparently the way November 11th used to be set up a lot of times, it was on like a weekend, so they would give our school, or like a certain day off, I think it was like Thursday or Wednesday. So now that Remembrance Day came on a certain day, it was on a day they'd have to give them off, and the unions decided, no, you can't take away our days off. So I had 2 days off.
Oh, nice.
And it was turned into mostly 3 days off. So I had a 5-day weekend. So,
wow.
To get that done, I'm like, all right, I have left no homework. I don't have a lot of stuff going on then, so I'm gonna play some Dragon Age. So I spent a good, eight or 10 hours over the weekend getting in some Dragon Age. So, it's not too bad.
You ever played Fallout 4?
On the other hand, I'm a poor college student.
I moved off my brother who had his copy on Steam, so I just took his. Because we have the Steam family sharing plan. Or whatever. And I took his.
It ain't gonna run Fallout.
Yeah, mine barely can.
The only reason I don't have Fallout 4 in front of me right now is because I'm halfway thinking I should just wait for them to do a game of the year so I get all the DLC. They charge an outrageous amount of money for DLC.
I'm sure there's a season pass somewhere that's like $30.
There is a season pass. But anyway, I'm still going. I never finished Dragon Age, so I'm going through that. Got some stuff going on. There's one guy that doesn't like me, so I'm going to exile him and kill him. My girlfriend's not going to like him in the game. Fuck it. shit, hate that guy because he does not like me. That's all it takes, man. Just like me, and you're fucking dead. Fucking dead.
What a game.
Yeah. So, but now it's Monday, so I'm actually installing an Oracle database. What we talk now, which is super fun. So my computer is going crazy there, installing that database. So that's fun. And then it's gonna break, and I'll be mad. And then it's gonna happen while we're on the air. So that's always fun. You know, great time. Brian, what have you been up to the last, I don't know, week?
Well, I played Fallout 4. That's pretty much like the most interesting thing I've done this week. Was played Fallout 4 and
Captain Batson.
And I played Fallout 3 before Fallout 4 came out. So, it's been a really good game. The problem is with these kind of games, it's like you play for 15 hours, then you kind of realize like you've barely really done anything. It's like you still have like 100 hours to go before you even like feel like you're getting close to being finished with it.
Yeah, I feel that was like Dragon Age, where I just kind of go around and talk to my player character and see if they have anything to say. It's like, all right, then I go around and hit on everybody, of course, and then I'm done. And then I just go and see if they have anything else to say.
Yeah.
You know what? Still have nothing to say? All right, cool.
I still have
a question, Brian.
Okay.
Are you a Fallout 3 man or a Fallout New Vegas man?
3. I couldn't get into New Vegas. I don't know where it is. Like I've played it a few times, and I have like the best version on Steam, but I haven't like really beaten it or anything. And I'm sure if I play it again, I'll probably get into it. But the first time I played it, it's like I don't know. Just
I will say I think New Vegas is the greatest video game ever made.
Wow.
No, fight me is my thing.
Yeah, especially with the DLC for New Vegas, because I thought it added like a whole new thing, a whole new like side story that looped together through all the different DLC chapters.
Oh,
it just added even more too.
I played the exact same amount on both Fallout games, where I would start the game, I play for a little bit, I get to the first town, and then I'd just have the complete urge to murder everybody. So I would do that, murder everybody, and then the game would essentially be ruined. And it's like, alright, I guess I'm done.
I'm usually too nice, and I just, like, be all nice to people. Like, I use my charisma perk to, like, just be nice, and let's not fight, let's just barter, and let's talk it over. And then I play a second time, I just kill everybody.
Well, that's what I liked about New Vegas, is that I felt like it rewarded you for making a moral choice more. Like, if you choose to be evil, there's actual consequences for it. I thought more than Fallout 3. And it was easier to be evil. Like, I thought Fallout 3 definitely wanted to force you to be a good guy.
Yeah.
Whereas New Vegas is more ambiguous, and so I found it more enjoyable to be a good guy in that game because I had a choice not to be.
Yeah, I felt the same way in Fallout 4. Because it's, one mission I finished recently was, you have to, like, dig up a place underground where you could go under a storage room and you could get all these bottle caps and stuff, and then somebody stops you and it's like, well, you either had a choice of killing the person who's in charge of the dig because they kind of screw you over, or you just kill everybody and you get all the bottle caps. And I chose kill the bad guy because I didn't like being lied to, so that was the easy choice to make. I mean, it's just like, so it's like, for me, it's like, if you lie to me or if I don't like you, you're dead. Fallout, I should say.
That's a good thing to remember for the rest of this podcast.
Yeah.
Brad, remember that. If we ever cross that man.
I mean, that's basically what happened in the WCW show. We'll get to that. Yeah, so that's fun. Now, onto the like, wrestling side. Now, Now, before we kind of get into everything else, now, Dan, you were talking to me, or you were talking to us, I think you were talking to Chuck before we started. You were talking about something that was bugging you, and we're going to, like, this may be our new segment where we just, like Firepro Podcast pissed off its fans. I don't know what it's called. It's fans. It's that one guy that listens to us. What's going on, Bone Machine? You were talking about how like booking ideas? Maybe you can go into it. Just explain.
There's something about a certain type of wrestling, of hardcore wrestling. It's a certain kind of guy who always wants to tell you about how much better everything used to be. And, you know, my basic philosophy on that is that in ye olden times, in the before times, things used to be good in some ways, and there were other ways where they weren't, because it was just times. Like, there's never, like, this period of any kind of history, especially wrestling history, where everything just was great. And if you got to live there, you really lived in happy times. It's just every era of wrestling, some things are good, some things are shitty. You get used to the things that are good and start taking them for granted, and you focus on the things that are shitty. That's what people get to do.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a certain kind of wrestling fan who thinks everything would just be better if guys did the donut hopeful spot. If heels reached into their trunks and pulled out nothing and punched a guy and then put it back in their trunks.
You know what was good? That sounds wrestling.
Yep.
Men sounds wrestling. Back when men were men and women were women, I don't know.
Dogs
kept it to themselves.
Everything would be better if a guy just stood in the corner and stomped his boot three times, and that meant it was magically loaded with lead, I don't know, or steel. And then, he stomped three times again, and now the referee went to check it, and there's nothing there. Like, I'm not saying anything bad about that stuff. It's just, it worked in a certain era.
Like, territory days, like, especially, I know people are, like, 70s guys, I get, like, the, like, mid-80s, mid to late 80s, especially, like, NWA or, just early WCW, like, that's my fucking jam, man. Like, I'll watch that all the time. Like, Flair and, like, Luger when he fucking cared, like, that shit's great, but, I mean, it's just different. I mean, like, that, you get that and you get the Attitude Era side where people kind of remember those storylines and that Crash TV style that Russo was doing with Austin. I've been watching those shows. I mean, they are entertaining in a way, but they're not, I don't know if they're good. I mean, like, Austin's great and whatever, but there's almost a lot more bad than good. The funny thing I always think about that and why you bring it up is, especially the Attitude specifically, is there's a lot of fan who are big on the wrestling side. Like, you hear complaints about, you know, talking and the Authority, which I have my own problem with the Authority as well, but, like, about people talking and not having wrestling. But if you really think about it, like, the wrestling, especially on the lower cards, is, like, night and fucking day from what it was in the 90s.
Oh, God, yes.
Like, especially in the WWF. Like, I mean, WCW, which is, you know, my jam, like, there was better stuff, but they had their own problems. But if you think about match quality, like, even if you're talking about WWE, the matches are, most of them are better. It's just, you know, there's days of that problem with storytelling. So it's just kind of what you're saying. Where
and
one's good, one is.
Yeah, and there's a certain thing, I guess, a hardcore older fan who bitched about WWF in the 80s when they were taking over the territories, or bitched about the 90s. It's like, look, you got what you wanted. There's a lot of wrestling, and, it's not that fun to watch? Yeah, people tried to tell you that. Like, there's a certain kind of hardcore fan who kind of never learns anything, ever.
I've been watching 2001 WWF, and I think, like, that's, like, the best era for me. I'm not saying you should do 2001 in today's WWE, because it's totally different, but, I mean, even though you shouldn't be doing all that stuff, you shouldn't be doing the Attitude Era stuff, because really that was, like, Austin and Rock holding things together. I really do think there's some elements in there, like the way they booked, that would work better in WWE today.
I want the title to change hands, like, every single week. Like, I can't deal that anymore.
No.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that's kind of the best period of WWE for me, or WWF for me, too, because it felt like that was the era where Vince hired professional writers and then didn't monkey with them. So the results were a lot better.
That's the problem. Vince McMahon now has to be, like, all over everything, and it's kind of like, that's a problem. It is. It's very much a problem for them.
I think for me, and just drawing this all back around to the first thing, it's like wrestling's always changing. Always. That doesn't mean stuff from the past doesn't work. It just means you got to bring it to the now and update.
Yes.
You can't just, like, oh, man, I loved watching Jerry Lawler stick his hand down his trunks and then pull out a metal object and punch a guy with it. It's like, okay, if you saw that today, about a fifth of the audience would pop and cheer, like, oh, I remember people used to do that. And then everybody else would sit there going, oh, that's phony horse.
Why don't the heels cheat anymore?
Like,
why didn't bring back time limits? What's going on? Come on, man.
Like,
where's JR, man? He's here.
Like, maybe you could bring back time limits, but you can't bring back all these different heel spots. You have to come up with new heel spots.
No time limits. Time limits are so stupid that they only did one of two things. Either the time limit was completely ignored or told you how short the match was going to be, or Steven Regal would use it to get a time out in
1997.
Yeah. I go back to that, man.
Well, I mean, I don't think time limit draws are the worst thing in the world, because now we live in an era where we have a million non-finishes that are, like, really repetitive, and they're super complicated in a way that looks stupid, where just having the thing end in a draw, it's like, well, we didn't have to think about that. This one just ended in a draw. And, yeah, that's not satisfying, but how many of their finishes are satisfying?
That just makes it done being lazy.
I mean, I think it's also just really hard to come up with a bunch of unique finishes all the time. And what they tend to do is come up with one and then do it to hell.
Yeah.
Kind of a last bit to go on that here. Like, I think the thing that you're talking about, which is the weekly TV, I think that's part of it too. Because when you're thinking back, you don't think about weekly TV. Like, I mean, if you want to go on and talk about Raw and you know, praise, say, like, Miss Out or something like that, like, you gotta remember that weekly TV was awful for the most part. Like, there were some big moments and stuff like that. Just like they're kind of just raw, but there was a lot of jobbing, like some like it, just that stuff.
Miss South didn't have as much of that.
No, but I'm just more. I just,
and that's why people loved. Like, that's why people loved it back then, because they were the only ones doing TV where there wasn't any jobber squashes, and so people lost their goddamn.
Maybe bad example, but I meant like. In the territory days, a lot of it was just like it was now, and probably more so, where those weekly shows were more just a build to whatever else they were going to.
Yeah, like the big thing back in the olden days of the territories was like you got like a 5-minute jobber squash and then, you know, a 3-minute interview, which is what you really were watching television to see anyway.
Yeah.
And then maybe one angle a month that made you really light your pants on fire.
Yeah, and the problem is just right now is they don't even have that angle. And they're
saying
it's awful, so, but, you know.
To me, it's like, those territory shows are more, like, remembered because they're easier to watch than Raw, because Raw is very hard to sit through for 3 hours. I mean, like you said, the territory shows are, like, jobber matches and interviews and plugs for their local shows, and it's just kind of more easier to watch. It's not, like, complicated like Raw.
And if you can watch 96 Raws back when they were still an hour, those shows are terrible in the same way that the modern ones are terrible, it's just they're only an hour. So you get done with them fast, and you're like, well, that's not so bad.
They're actually kind of worse, because imagine if they go do 3 hours of, like, Freddie Joe Floyd versus the Pug. That would be, like, really bad. Like, really, really, really bad. Like, global wrestling bad. Like
people talk bad about Cesaro's microphone skills, but, like, imagine Johnny B. Bad, only he can't be Johnny B. Bad anymore, so he's just a joke.
Yeah, God. I don't know.
Hey, I'm going to get you in a cheetah, because I'm going to run the Serengeti. I'm Johnny. No, I'm not. I'm Wild Man.
I get why people like Johnny B. Bad, but when he went to WWF and became the Wild Man, it's like, he kind of lost a lot of things. Whatever charisma he had was with Johnny B. Bad.
Yeah, the crazy story about that is that Vince basically watched a Johnny B. Bad match and screamed, "You've got to sign him, my God!" And then nobody had the guts to tell him, Vince, WCW owns that gimmick. Like, he thought it was like a territory guy where he could just take the guy and put him on his TV. And then they've already given him the biggest guaranteed contract they've ever given anybody. But then they have to come up with a new gimmick in like 2 days.
The WWE narrative is that he sucks, but I didn't think he sucked. He just wasn't as good as he was in WCW.
I think towards needs all the hell. Which, oh, Seth, please get better. Don't be Mark Marrow. Don't become Marvelous Mark Marrow when you get back.
Hey, man, he had that cool generic, like, Rose Priest song, though, like. Yeah.
Sure.
If Seth Rollins comes back and he's 50 pounds heavier, I'm going to be real worried.
Oh, man, he's got that P90X shit, man. Have you seen that, man?
He does CrossFit training. He can't. I don't know.
They're all the fucking same. They're all crazy.
No, CrossFit is completely different because that's for true psychotics.
Yeah, well, you know what? They're both crazy. As someone who has low cardio and super out of shape.
I feel like P90X people are like the lazy people on the way to CrossFit. Because, like, that's a thing you do in your home. But then you go, and CrossFit's like a temple, a tabernacle for exercise. Where you have to be.
Man, you gotta watch those words, man. Tell me about you listening. That's swear words over there. Montreal swear words.
Can't say tabernacle? And
it's a stupid joke. It's a stupid joke. Yeah, I don't know. It's crazy. You did bring up that, and it did remind me of something I was talking about. I was thinking about when it comes to like weird kind of wrestling fan habits, about when like the idea of like, there's a lot of talk about like being a wrestling fan and like especially wrestling shirts and stuff like that. I know it's been kind of going back and forth. Where there's some kind of talk where like first of all before you get into it, like first of all I'll say that like 99% of all wrestling shirts are awful and they're all awful because you know they're awful.
Because the wrestling, especially in WWE's case, they try to do everything in-house, and I don't know if they're very creative people.
No, and there's always some
shirts requires a little bit of creativity.
There's always something silly on the back and stuff like that, but there's been an idea that I keep hearing where the idea is it doesn't look like a wrestling shirt, and these people always added that where they're talking about, yeah, so, I don't know, something happened, so we're back now, I guess. So, the thing I was getting at is the idea of closet wrestling fans, and is it still, like, a big thing? Like, I don't get it personally. I kind of grown past the point where I've stopped caring about what kind of other people think. But is closet wrestling fans still an epidemic? Like, is it still a thing?
Well, as a closeted wrestling fan myself, I think it's, I don't know.
But are you closeting the fact that, like, I'm not saying, like, I don't go around and be like, look at me, I like wrestling, I'm super cool, look at me. But I don't really stray away from it. Like, I just don't think, it's not as popular as it once was. So, you don't, like, it'd be like bringing up, like, any other thing out of nowhere. Like, if I'd be like, I'm going to talk about, like, guitar, like, I'm not going to talk about that out of nowhere because it doesn't really make any sense.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like I don't bring up wrestling at all to anyone I ever meet, ever.
If there's a wrestling show, I'll mention it. But really, I don't really talk about wrestling with other people unless they bring it up to me because they know I like wrestling. But they're kind of casual. They'll say something like, "Oh, is The Rock on Raw?" Or, "Oh, what happened to The Undertaker at SummerSlam?" And I'll.
But I think that's different. I think that there's a difference between that, like, that's just, like, you're looking at, because I think, like, wrestling, especially in, like, North America, has become a bit niche. But I don't think, like, I ever, like, I don't have a bunch of wrestling shirts, I don't, because they're all awful. But I have an old NWO shirt I've had for a long time, and I had the old Cena 8-bit shirt that I still wear every once in a while. That's, especially that Cena shirt, I mean, that's outside of him being internet popular right now.
I have a few New Japan shirts, but that's about it. I have, like, the logo and, a G1 shirt.
I can't really explain to you in a logical way why my brain sees it this way. But I have Doctor Who shirts. I have, I've got a Star Wars shirt in there somewhere.
Star Wars doesn't count.
I've got band t-shirts that kind of look goofy. I would never wear a wrestling t-shirt.
No.
Anyway,
I don't wear them out in public.
I would never consider it. And I can't tell you why other than I don't want to be seen as one of those people.
No.
And maybe that's not fair, because why are those people bad? Like, I mean, wrestling is like the last thing I feel like where people still act like there's something nerdy about it. Because like we live in this post-nerd world.
No, it's all the way you present yourself. If you're confident in anything, no one will care. I mean, just go, yeah, I like wrestling. It's stupid. And then, yeah, because you know what? Wrestling is dumb. That's how I always feel. It's like, it's just something stupid to watch. It's like slasher movies, or it's just like, it's kind of silly.
Yeah, I would never wear a slasher t-shirt either, because those people creep me out, too.
I don't think I'd wear a slasher t-shirt. Like, guys, I kind of got away from the point here.
I know what you're saying. It's just, there's something that feels like, I don't want to be judged as one of those people. Let me make my own impression.
Jerks, man, they're gonna judge you no matter what. That's like being judged ain't nothing. As someone who has like crazy social anxiety, I'm at the point where I'm like probably crazy. Like, man, these people are gonna judge you anyway.
I mean, that's the grown man way of thinking about it. Because
I'm a mature adult, damn it.
Well, yeah.
I'm an adult.
Yeah. I see what you're saying. And like I said, I have no intellectual argument for it other than, man, going to wrestling shows a lot as a kid, it's seeing a lot of goobers. And going, I don't want to be seen as one of those goobers.
Oh, man, I went to a host show, April? It was the first host show I've been to in, like, I don't know, 11, last since Raw came here. And I think when Raw came here, it was Steve Austin and Goldberg drinking beer. So, there's your time.
Really? I've only been to two wrestling shows. I went to Bound for Glory 2013.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah. And then a house show.
Good.
Yeah, and then a house show back in, like, 2004 with Triple H versus Chris Benoit for the world title. Yeah, that was, like, it.
I used to go to a lot of wrestling shows as a child, growing up in Winston-Salem, because WCW ran Winston-Salem all the time. But I haven't been really as any. The only thing I've been to as an adult was like armory shows. Like we would go to those in college because that we all found that kind of funny. But even then, I didn't really admit. Oh, I kind of like this. Oh, I kind of like seeing the Boogie Woogie Man. This is pretty fun for me. It was always, oh, this is funny, isn't it, guys? So insecurity. I'm a lesser man. That's for sure. But I understand being annoyed.
Hey, man, love yourself, man. No one's going to love you. That's how it works.
Mm-hmm.
But
this podcast, healing.
Brought to you by love. I love everyone. You're one of you are you. You're the greatest.
Yes, you.
That other guy, you. Yeah, that guy that's in the background, too. on to not love, I guess.
I think this was a lot of love.
People turn their backs. It's over. As in what was, I don't know if people might know the word upset, but I'm pretty sure an upset is just a surprise win. And so Holly Holm and MMA talk here. We're gonna talk about real fighting for real people, real men.
I think so. We go from love and tolerance to now real men only.
Real men fighting about. Well, not really, because we're talking about men, but real men, women. Real women and men.
We've gone off the rails.
I would say
it'd be crazy not to call this an upset, right? Like, just because someone was dominant doesn't mean it's not an upset, because
yes,
obviously.
Talking, just to confirm, anyone who's listening is an upset. Ronda Rousey lost to Holly Holm in the second round, and it was, I think it was probably the most one-sided championship fight I've ever seen in MMA.
Yeah,
at least the most one-sided where the champion got her ass kicked. Because obviously, Ryan had some one-sided ones.
Which is what, one-sided for the contender for sure. Like it was just, yeah, there were some Brock fights that were fucking fun. That's what it reminded me of. But like, yeah, so just kind of give an overview of what kind of goes on there. So what's funny, and I don't think I ever talked about that, but for the show. They were hyping. If you haven't seen it, you have to watch the commercials. Because I saw Joe Rogan and
Dana White
on a different place. This is going to happen, man. Come down, and this is like, this is going to be just the greatest fight in UFC. It's like the greatest fight in history ever.
Joe Rogan keeps saying, like, Ronda Rousey is like the greatest fighter of any sport of all time. It's like, really?
Joe Rogan. And what makes Joe Rogan?
Joe Rogan.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
Joe Rogan switched sides like a motherfucker.
Like we were saying, Joe Rogan basically went on. He was in the commercial being like, yeah, she's like the greatest woman ever lived. Like, you know, there's Joan of Arc, like. Mike Tyson, like, cry if it was, like, 1987, like just the fucking stupid shit. And, you know, like, Ronda Rousey's been, like, the build and, like, the fans coming to see Rousey, it's kind of made me, like, I always thought Rousey was kind of cocky, and I never liked her. Like, I'm a Misha Tate fan, like, always have been, always will. You know, like, I got it. I bought super expensive Misha Tate shirt because I wanted to support her, like, but...
You got her Amazon list stuff. Like, you've got everything.
No. I'll buy a piece of merchandise. I'm not giving things to Blink. I'm not, like, gift to porn star gal. That's just not me. but, yeah, so after those ads, I'm just like, even before that, I was ready. Like, you know what? Rousey's getting a bit cocky. Those fights are going, everyone's just like, it's going like that. That's what the ads. I'm like, I'm the serious beat. Like, this needs to happen. And it definitely happened. Rousey was ass. It was one side. She was running around, like, tripping. Like, there was... Remember that? I think it was Frank Mir. That fight where, like, Brock Lesnar was, like, falling over, like away from him. Like, it kind of felt like that, where it's just, like, it was so one-sided. And like you said, Dan, where, like... the announcers went from like, "Oh, you better watch out, Holly. It's gonna be a crazy thing." Like me, like, you know, Rousey's gonna go crazy. Goldberg said something along the lines of like, when she was getting around asking me like, "It's tough to be it takes a lot of effort to be a rock star." And like, this is the point where Joe Rogan realized like, "Uh oh, I gotta jump on this other bandwagon really, really quick because this ain't going nowhere." No, like, oh, she's getting beat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I haven't seen the fight, but from what I heard and what I read, and I saw the finish, it's like, she got dominated. I mean, Holly Holm studied her, and she obviously had a plan. Rousey had a plan. The plan backfired, and she didn't have another plan, and she got knocked out.
I wonder how big this is for, like, the history of fighting. Because there's a part of me that thinks, oh, we just saw women's MMA grow up a little bit. Because, you know, to this point, women's MMA has always kind of been a fragile thing. And you've always felt like maybe the fighters are going out of their way to be more aggressive so that they don't have to worry about not getting booked next month or whatever. And this one felt like there's finally a fighter who's come into women's MMA who's like, I'm not going to worry about is the fight exciting or not? I'm just going to do what it takes to win. And that's going to mean standing back here and letting Ronda run around like an idiot, and then when she's tired, punching her head in and counter-punching her and blocking her and everything else.
I think, in some ways, there's that big group of fans that came in to see Ronda Rousey beat people in 20 seconds. They're fucking gone.
I think
it makes things more interesting. Like, I don't, like, if you can't, like, if you want to judge Holm by this fight, like, she was great. I mean, if you got, like, some of her other fights weren't as one-sided, but I don't know if you, like, does that mean that Rousey wasn't as good as everyone thought she was, or Holmes isn't as good as everyone thinks she is now, or is it just, like, so is it, what's the reason?
You know, it's weird because Holm wasn't even that impressive before this fight. That's why I thought...
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, yeah.
I thought Rousey was going to win this easily, but, you know, I guess you could say Ronda got exposed here because she got dominated, but I just think Holm had a plan. I've heard she's been training for Rousey since day one, and she found a way to, I'm not really an MMA expert, so I don't, like, really know what happened, but obviously Rousey had a plan, and the plan she usually goes for is so dominant that she's won all of her matches very quickly. That plan didn't work this time, and Holm just was more confident, was more calmer, and you know, she just won. You know, you can also go into the fact that Rousey had a lot of, I don't know if you'd, you'd call it issues, but there were problems there that weren't there before, and that might have played into what happened a few days ago as well.
This is one of those things, this was one of those fights where there was a lot of stuff going into it that it, you know, if we weren't all kind of seduced by the fact that Ronda always wins every fight immediately, you could have seen this coming. And now everyone's going to retroactively go, well, it's obvious. You know, because like when her mom, you know, I think it was like a month or two ago, goes, yeah, her trainer's an idiot, and what she's, how she's being prepared for this fight is really stupid, and I'm not even going to go. Like, what? Mama Rousey kind of knew what was that? What was coming? You know? And just to be a little bit more specific about that, you know, her trainer's been criticized for, A, not being very good, but, B, leading her more into this being a stand-up fighter, concentrating more on her striking. And
I don't want to say, like, made her think like she was a world-class boxer, but the last few fights she was doing stand-up, and she looked good. And I guess maybe the mentality there is like, oh, now I'm a really great boxer because I'm the great Ronda Rousey and I can beat everybody with punches. But, you know, Holm is a world-class boxer.
Yeah.
That's the problem. Nobody else has the boxing skills that Holm has, and Ronda couldn't match up to her. She just couldn't.
And I think we've seen this before in MMA with guys who are, like, really high-quality wrestlers, or some guys who are, like, really high-quality jiu-jitsu practitioners, and then they sort of go, well, I'm going to be a striker now, and they spend a lot of time working on their striking, and they maybe get, like, good at throwing punches or landing kicks, but they don't necessarily have the footwork, or they don't have the countering ability, the blocking ability, the defensive striking ability that, like, someone who is trained in, spent years in boxing or kickboxing does. And it's like, yeah, Ronda can charge at you and bull rush you, and if you're not used to being in a lot of stand-up fights, which there's a lot of women who aren't, you know, that's just the reality. There's a lot of women fighters who just aren't well-rounded like that. It's like, well, Rousey charging at you, throwing heavy hands, that's gonna put a lot of girls on their back. Not a professional kickboxer. That's not really going to do much to her. And that's how that fight went. You know? Rousey just chasing her around the cage, not landing anything of note, getting exhausted, and then, you know. To me, the big important thing to me was that Rousey got her down, though. Like, it's not like you can't take Holly Holm down. Rousey did it, but by the time she did it, she was gassed.
Yeah, she was tired.
It's like, I think if they do a rematch, as long as Rousey hasn't completely blown her, you know,
no.
As long as she hasn't, like, lost her will to fight, like, is, you know, that's what I mean. It's like, I mean, there's people who brought up that, you know, bully fighters, when they finally get stood up to, don't handle it that well. If she comes back and has her, you know, has her mind right, I don't see why she can't beat Holm. As long as she has a better game plan. Like, you can't chase her around and get exhausted.
But she did try to do that. That's the thing. Like, she did try to take her down.
But by then
she was trying to get in the arm bar. But,
like, she was dead tired because she spent a minute and a half running around the ring.
She's going to get better by, like, going and, like,
basically just being more patient. Like, waiting for an opportunity to clinch her instead of charging right at her.
Because
it's not like calling home some great ground fighter. Like, she was able to withstand that because Rousey was gassed. If Rousey's not gassed when she goes for a takedown, I don't see why she can't beat her. Like, I think it's more of an issue is that Rousey came into that fight thinking she could just beat anybody by just bull rushing them, and you can't bull rush Holly Holm. That's not going to work. She's good at avoiding you, and she's good at countering you. So,
a lot of people say this is like Buster Douglas and Mike Tyson because Mike Tyson, before the Buster Douglas fight, was dominant, and everybody was telling them, oh, you're awesome, you're like one of the best fighters ever. And everybody in the media, all of his coaches and everything was telling him that. Then he goes in and, you know, I don't know, like, if he didn't train or if he didn't, like, think that he took this seriously, but Douglas took it very seriously and outclassed him.
And part of the issue there that I think is a parallel with Ronda is that Tyson sort of distanced himself from all the people who had been part of helping train him to be Mike Tyson. He pushed a lot of those people away and replaced them with yes men. And, like, there's these famous images from the Buster Douglas fight where they don't even have, like, the cold presses that you put on fighters' eyes to, like, help them when they've been punched in the face in between rounds. They've got, like, a condom full of ice water. Because they didn't bring, like, they didn't have basic training materials. Wow. So, like, they're just stuck using whatever they had in the back. And people talking about Edmund, I think there's people, you know, her trainer Edmund are trying to make a lot of comparisons to that. And I don't know if he's that bad, but it's there. It's like, you get so big that you think you don't need training anymore.
All I can say about that is that you should, if you get beaten up like that in the first round, and you go to your corner and your coach is saying, you're doing well, keep it up. I mean, it's like, yeah. No, you're not doing well. You're in trouble.
Good job, honey. We're going to go get ice cream.
And that kind of says bad things about Ronda's ability to bounce back, that she needs that kind of positive reassessment in between rounds instead of, hey, that's not working, let's do this. Like, if that's what she needs is to be told she's doing well, even though she's getting her ass kicked, that's a front runner.
If anyone doesn't need ego, it's probably Rousey. I mean, there's more than a bunch of problems that I don't know. I just don't think it could happen, but, I mean, she was just so classed by home, who knew exactly what's going on, unless she changes her game plan 100%, which I don't really know what that even means.
Well, I think because she is a much better ground fighter. She's just gotten into this habit of thinking
but she
stand-up.
Tried to put but him on the ground.
Dead. She was dead tired. Like, It's a thing about pacing yourself.
She
like,
got gassed really early.
That fight with better cardio. Because like going into the fight, the smart bettors all started betting on home just on the weigh-in because Rousey looked out of shape. Like people knew going in, ooh, she don't look good. Yeah. Like maybe she'll get through it, but she looks like shit. So I think as long as she comes into that fight with in shape and with a better game plan, she can be home. I think the thing, though, the person who's never going to be home is Cyborg. And I don't know if we want to bring up Cyborg, but
I want to see that fight.
Yeah, I do too.
Can we just talk about something personal for me, which is that fucking Dana White and Ronda Rousey, they dodge mistake and they suck for the consequences.
Well, I don't know if dodge is the right.
She dodged them. And me and Misha were like high five at the end. Like it was great.
I think it was more of a like they fucked her over. It's not like I don't think anybody was afraid Misha was going to beat her.
No, but I think I think part of it was they liked the idea of either kind of holding off Misha for 200 if they needed it, trying to get them either do the Cyborg fight or if not do Misha. So it's like, all right, well, you know, Holly Holmes, whatever, say she's undefeated boxer, and she only had two fights in UFC and both in there. And I think they both had overconfidence.
Yeah, I think that was definitely overconfidence. And I think they looked at Holmes as like, oh, she's kind of like a reasonable facsimile of Cyborg. She can fight Holmes, and then that'll build her up like, yeah, Cyborg's nothing. I can Cyborg, yeah.
Well, did you see the like Dana post-fight where Dana was acting immature like Dana about it, where he wasn't even happy for Holly Holm, which is just not funny.
Yeah, I mean, that's Dana. I mean, he's a classless jerk-ass. It's just what he is.
He's like the jock stereotype, but now he's a billionaire, like, or a millionaire.
He's a really dumb guy who knows this one thing pretty well, but then consistently screws it up by having a screwed-up attitude.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's just Dana. But, you know, he's a moron. It's what it is.
Yeah.
I have a final little story end to it, but do you have any last kind of things to say about this whole thing? Where do you think it's going? What's going on? What do you think?
Yeah,
well, go ahead.
Yeah, apparently according to like some of the MMA insiders, like Frederick, our mutual friend, apparently the plan is that not to do Rousey and Holm immediately. That Holm's going to have a match apparently in March.
Rousey, I think, is taking a break.
Yeah, so, she's doing a bunch of moves. She's 8 months off.
Yeah,
at least if she even comes back at all.
Yeah, who knows? Rousey might have had her will broken.
She released a statement saying she will be back, but You know,
that Instagram post doesn't mean anything to me.
Yeah. It might have not even been written by her. Like, that might have been written by people.
Sure. Yeah, I don't take that as anything. She could see like home meet again. Like, Rosie like went on like a boat. She kind of had that ego about her doing the beating and stuff like that. And now that she doesn't have it, I don't know. It depends on how her acting goes. If she starts making money there, she might think like, oh, well, whatever. I don't really have to go and possibly get beat. Like, if I can do this acting thing, which she can't. She's a terrible actor. Like, don't get me wrong. But yeah, we're still able to make money, so who knows?
A lot of what happens going forward, I think, is going to be based on how does Rhonda handle getting her ass whooped. Like, she didn't get outpointed, and it wasn't just a lucky shot. She got her ass whooped.
Yeah, it was a dominant win for home. That's the biggest thing, is that, like I don't know about the GSP Matt Sarah match and how that was until Sarah knocked him out, but...
That was a classic, like, you hit a lucky shot.
Yeah, okay, yeah. No, this was like a dominant just beatdown, like the entire first round and the second round, obviously. This was a completely dominant performance. There's like no ifs, ands, or buts about that.
It's gonna be tough for her. That's a tough thing to come back from. We'll see how mentally strong she is.
And I mean, when they do the rematch, it's gonna be like a really, really big deal.
It's gonna blow away any match she's ever done.
And that's
going to get it.
You know, that's the perfect match for UFC 200. It is.
If Holm doesn't get beat before, though, they seem pretty insistent on having Holm fight one fight before it.
I hope it's Misha.
I don't know. Misha might be a victor. I'm not sure. If it's Cyborg, Holm will kill Cyborg.
I think it'll be Misha, too. Like, they can't fuck her over twice. Like, they just can't.
Oh, they can. Like, now Misha's on the shit list. They can fuck her twice.
Yeah, she was not happy, and she hasn't done really much since they went with Holm.
If you read between the lines on some of the stuff Dave's been saying recently, David Meltzer of the Wrestling Observer, the newsletter, they don't have a lot of respect for Misha. Like, they don't think they really have to keep her happy. Like, they look at her as like, oh, she's a pin-up girl who can fight. They don't look at her as like, oh, we need to worry about her, keeping her happy. Maybe they're right,
she's
maybe they're wrong. They just seem
like dumb, because I think she's a star, man. And like, she doesn't have the win loss record of like Ronda Rousey. But like, what is it like so during like the like one of the last things, like, she was most searched for person, like, of all the UFC people during last fight or something silly like that. Anyway, Team Misha, let's go.
I imagine it probably will be Tate, because Cyborg's not taking that fight.
About Cyborg,
Cyborg's not taking that fight against Holm.
You know what?
She was too chicken shit to fight Rhonda. You think she's going to fight a girl who's going to counter a puncher to death? No.
You know, when it comes to Cyborg, though, I mean, it's not until she beats the weight that I even think she's going to do anything in UFC.
I want to see Cyborg fight someone who's not a complete tomato can. Like,
when I
see that, then, like, I'll... Like, okay, yeah, we'll consider what Cyborg is or does, but she's never fought anybody.
Yeah.
Like, at least not since Japan. I think she had a fight in Japan against somebody who's considered legit. Like, the whole American career is fighting just people no one's ever heard of, or girls that are putting on 20 pounds just to make weight against her, where, you know...
Gina Carano.
Gina Carano, who was not... any kind of real fight. I mean, that was there was a pinup girl
who
did some fights.
Yeah.
So
that's not true. Team Misha.
I mean, what people say about Misha was true about Carano, because Carano wasn't any kind of fighter. Like, it was proven out. She never beat any.
Yeah. Yeah. Gina Carano. I don't know.
So we'll see. It's going to be an interesting time because UFC's business was going down, and then Rhonda hit a new level of drawing ability, and then Connor fell into their laps. So, like, they had this downward trend that just suddenly got reversed by these two fighters. And if something starts threatening Rhonda, and I don't think she's dead as a draw. I think that's crazy.
But if she loses it again, she is.
She loses again, she loses a lot. Yeah. I don't think she goes down and she's, like, a 200,000 buys draw. But she's still a draw. But she's not this mega draw. She's just again the whole.
She's not a Megatron now. I don't. Unless
she's a Megatron now. Yes,
that's the match. But I don't know.
It's like a 900. She's like an 800,000-900,000 buys fight.
I don't know.
That Betch fight drew crazy, and Betch is nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, that's literally just a fight against a stick.
Pretty much.
There's also
kind of a grudge kind of aspect to that, but you know it's very much Ronda Rousey's drawing power. It was very much that made that number so big.
And this one does because it didn't seem to have as much juice going into it.
I was reading before the show that this did the most Google searches out of anything, even more than Pacquiao and Mayweather.
Even more than boobs? I don't think so.
I don't think anything's going to top that.
Boob was number one.
And yeah.
And the thing that a lot of the... one of the things that a lot of the pay-per-view prognosticators have had issues with is that Ronda's audience is a little unique, and they always seem to underestimate how many people are going to buy that for shows. So I don't think she's dead as a draw. I mean,
no.
What history has told us is that if once you get this level, there's always going to be dumb people who are going to make excuses after every loss. Like, Tyson had basically a 10-year career of being the biggest draw in boxing and couldn't beat anybody. He couldn't beat you, Brad.
She's
closer than a lot of people want to admit. And
make a fool of yourself here. Come on,
no, like as far as a draw, she's close, and I don't think she's gonna have a 10-year career of being garbage and still drawing. Like that's kind of unheard of. That's what Tyson pulled off, but she's got 3 or 4 years, even if she's not beating anybody. I mean, my God, look how long Shamrock drew before he finally stopped drawing.
Shamrock is still a draw motherfucker. He's going to go like a billion zillion buys.
Yeah, he's terrible. Shamrock has been a terrible fighter for longer than he was a good fighter. Once you make your bones as a pay-per-view draw, people will just make excuses for you.
Shamrock's name as a draw in the last 10 years is a bit questionable. But
look how old he was before it finally fell apart. Like, people paid to see him fight Ortiz knowing he's going to get killed.
Yeah, that was craziness. Like, if Rousey...
But Rousey's that kind of worker. She'll be able to...
If Rousey says, like, to, like, Alexa Davis that she's going to, like, beat her to a living death, yeah, fucking good.
Of course she'll do that stuff. Ronda is a good worker. She'll do that stuff if she's got to keep drawing. She's already cut from that cloth. Like, I'm not doubting that. Like, the whole thing with Holm that got all that extra interest at the end was, like, some totally orchestrated bullshit. Oh, God, this fight's not doing so well. Let's have a fake fight. Like, or let's have a fake altercation. Boost them. I mean, that's straight out of the Tyson playbook. So, yeah, I don't doubt that she's still going to be a box office attraction. But she definitely loses a lot if she can't be Holm.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. Well, we're going to end this part on a very good note here. A insane article from ESPN was posted a few hours ago. They interviewed the Las Vegas bettmakers. And I know this was a kind of a sad story what can happen in there, but it was a good ending, so I want to keep it back. So, as we all know, this was a bit of an upset. So, we all know that Holly Holm was not on the person to get. And the betting odds definitely proved that. And they interviewed people here. They were saying about how much money they were losing. Sad story. And I know. And so they were talking about how much money they were losing. And they interviewed them talking about, like, some of the quotes talking about, like, you know, at one point we were approaching six digits on our losses. We had some late money with the favor, which essentially made our losses a little bit smaller. But with what we could have lost at that point, who knows? But so that's really sad. A really sad quote from these bettmakers. But the next day, a shining light happened. The floor happened where all the underdogs from there lost all their matches for football. So they were leaving after that day. So a good ending for the Las Vegas bettmakers and a big giant What is this? Why? Like this is on ESPN. Like where like. like, who's reading this and being like, oh, good.
I'm glad this worked out for the fact that
this is four. Like, it's just, it's like that, remember that, like, that South Park episode of Piracy where they were talking to all the celebrities and, like, how, like, you won't believe an island today because you pirate. Like, it sounds like, it's like, oh, no, now this person can only buy three houses.
People are, this is a thing, casinos don't make a ton from the betting. That's not really a big profit center for them. It's a thing they do to bring people into the casino and then hope that they play some slots. it's more of just like a way to bring people in that they go play the thing that they make a lot of money off of.
It's a way to bring people together.
That's why the casinos don't want online gambling. It's because they want you coming into the casino to lay your bet, hoping you'll play something that's more profitable for them.
Yeah.
Before you leave.
Dude, you're not profitable. You all watch Spring Stampede this week.
God.
Do y'all know what the tagline of this show was?
What?
The New Blood in the Millionaires Club in a savage shootout for gold.
Yeah.
Stomp of approval.
Yeah. Alright, so before we even get into about this horrid show, let me just say that this pay-per-view was thing people paid for, that I paid for. I remember I watched it live 15 years ago. I had 14 matches on it. 14!
Yeah.
In a two and a half hour pay-per-view.
It was like a 1988 WWF pay-per-view.
Yeah,
in that sense.
So it's more over people. More people were over in
HBO. It was worse to watch. And the work was obviously very different, but it's that same, hey, it's old WWF, and we're going to have a ton of 5-minute matches.
Yep. So, yeah, so three tournaments for each title. And to give us some more background on this, we're going to talk to our resident historian, Dan Ford. So let's start us off with this pay-per-view.
So this is the first pay-per-view of the new Russo-Eric Bischoff era of WCW. They brought Russo back, and they brought back Bischoff, which was a monumental moment in the history of the company. It caused Bill Bush to quit. Bill Bush was the guy who was given Eric's job when Eric was fired. He was primarily an accountant, so he was more concerned with like the bottom line of things. Not so much up on the wrestling, but he became very close to Kevin Sullivan and J.J. Dillon, who were telling him, oh, this Vince Russo guy's a psychotic moron. He's a real gosh dang idiot. And so Russo got fired by Bill Bush. Sullivan got put back in charge, along with J.J. Dillon as sort of his co-booker. And then they got shit-canned after a very short amount of time because the ratings weren't coming up fast enough for the head of Turner at the time. The guy who was in charge of all of Turner Entertainment was not seeing the ratings moving up immediately enough, and then Sullivan and JJ and Bill Bush were telling him, look, we gotta slowly rebuild this thing, we gotta slowly get things back, you know, they've ruined everything, and we gotta slowly build it back. And then Russo started contacting him, and Eric started contacting him, going, we can fix this immediately. And the Turner exec looked at that and went, oh, well then, we can fix it immediately, that's what I'm gonna go with. The thing that a lot of wrestling people don't talk about is this is when the merger is finalizing, and it's like it's very important for everybody to look like their departments are going well.
Yeah.
So when you've got people telling you they can make your department look really good now, you're a little bit more inclined to listen to them than somebody who's saying, well, if you give us 9 months, we can get this thing back. So, 9 months comes around, I may not have my job anymore. Who knows? So that's the bet they made. That's the why they brought back in Russo and Bischoff. The feeling was is that Bischoff could help Russo communicate with talent better, because that was obviously a major weakness of his the first go around. And that Eric, because he had relationships with all the top main event talent like Hulk Hogan, you know, he could help Russo get this, you know, get those guys to buy into his vision.
Whatever that may be.
Yeah, because the issue was that Russo was telling people, well, I didn't have to talk to the talent as much in WWF. I had the great ideas, but Vince sold the talent. So Eric can do that for me here. He can be my Vince McMahon who sells the talent on my ideas. So, that means we start the new blood and the Millionaires Club. All the new blood aligned with Vince Russo, and Eric turns on Hulk Hogan and joins with them. And the Millionaires Club are all the older, established main eventers. And we are told that we're supposed to boo the young guys who are hungry and want their spot.
I thought it wasn't supposed to be that way. I thought originally, being before you know that, I just want to go there, but just one thing I remember vividly for whatever reason when this happened is they took all the titles away, right? And they said they were going to do the tournament.
They did that.
Yeah, so I think it might have been that day or that week. Eric Bischoff was on Wrestling Observer Radio with Dave Meltzer. This is back, as you can tell, this was a long time ago, because this is when like Dave had a bunch of people like talking about right away. He had Eric Bischoff on there, and he was answering much questions for it, and he was just as, you know, he had basically all the same things that we were talking about here with feeling like what changes, like what's going on there, and Eric seemed really confident about it. Like, it didn't seem like they were going in and screwing everything over. Like, it seemed like they were actually trying, but...
He said all the right things. Like, he said that... Yeah. He was going to bring in guys from Japan. He was going to do this. He was going to do that. He was going to do all the things that Wrestling Observer listeners wanted for WCW. Yeah. And then he proceeded to do none of those.
Yeah, that's the thing about Eric. Anytime you used to, like, anytime, if you can go unearth, like, him being interviewed by Wayne Keller in that period or by Dave in that period, he just goes on and he's basically, look, we really are a huge fan of Baba's All Japan booking. We really can't wait to start implementing some of that here in WCW. It's like, that's not happening. You have Vince Russo. But that's not happening. Kevin Nash is your booker.
You know, my back and memory might not serve me well, but wasn't the initial idea to have the New Blood be the faces, but it didn't work? I always just remember them being booked more, the New Blood being booked as the faces originally, but it's just like, here's the guys you don't really care about, and then it's like DDP and Sting. It's like, you're supposed to hate them now for no fucking reason.
Yeah, it's like they just assumed that all of the fans in the arena would react the same way that hardcore fans were reacting online at the time, which is like, God, we want to see some young talent. We want to see the new guys. We don't want to see these old farts anymore. But in the arenas, they like the old farts. Especially Ric Flair. It's like they lumped in everyone as in like all of the old guys. It's like, no, people were kind of sick of Kevin Nash. Like, people were kind of sick of
guys like DDP and Sting and a few others. They were over, and they were cheered. Like, guys like Kevin Nash, nobody cared about.
It's almost like back to the same mom thing we've been going on all day. Like, that's their name, mom. It's like, no, do they hate us? It's like, no, they hate all, it's no Mr. Nash, no Hogan. They don't hate you. They just hate all old people. Okay. We're going to get ice cream now. We'll go get pizza. Like, you know, it seems like that was the excuse. Like, no, the problem was the NWO and Hogan and Nash and a group of other people. It wasn't really DDP.
I think it underrated, well, not maybe. Maybe this is exactly maybe. One of the other reasons why the fans turned on the New Blood is that one of their spokesmen was Vince Russo, one of the top three worst performers in the history of the wrestling business.
Yo, bro, come on. He was just doing what he was doing. He wasn't supposed to be good, bro. Come on, bro.
He's got a promo. He has no instinct that he should be a squirrel. Like, even Eric understood he's supposed to be squirrely and afraid of things. Because he's a little tiny man. Russo's walking around with his little buggy whip arms and his baseball bat and his puffed up chest going, yeah, I'm tough. I'm Vince Russo. I'm from Long Island. By the way, Long Island, the softest place in America. There is not a softer, less tough place than Long Island, New York. It's like saying, oh, yeah, I'm from the burbs. Yeah, look how tough I am. I'm from the mean suburbs. I'm going to get you.
He hung out with Hogan at West Tampa. I'm just letting you know, like, don't fuck with them.
West Tampa could be scary. It is a city. Like, it is a, there are homeless in there.
It is the city.
Like, Long Island is a suburb next to a big city, and they act like, yeah, I'm from New York. Oh, I'm tough. No, you're not. You're from a place. You're from three stores down from Billy Joel's mansion. You're not. Anyway, now they've alienated everyone from Long Island. Yeah,
everyone in the world.
You're weak. You're weak people, Long Island.
Fans who listen to us, go fuck yourself. But, yeah, so...
We last 5 minutes in the mean streets of East Winston. We kick your ass.
I'm camping for the man. You better watch it. We'll tell you to where directions are. Don't fuck with me.
You come down to my Dixie Classic Fair, we'll be stab you quickly.
We might be able to beat you up, but our food is really bad for you. I don't know.
Oh, we will stab you, though. That's not a lie.
We'll cut you. Have you ever had donair fan? They're terrible for you.
But anyway. Like, Russo's walking around with goddamn Iron Man to the fucking road. Yeah,
the Road Warriors theme. It used to be the Road Warriors theme.
Like, yeah, I'm the one man road warrior, and I'm the Batman. I hit people with baseball bats. I'm tough. And then he's ordering around all. It's like everything people get mad at Hunter and Stephanie for in the Authority. Russo's doing that times 50 because he's literally just standing there going, "You're a piece of shit. Why don't you just go get me some groceries?"
He's like the worst. Promo like TV. You already said this, but like all his promos were the same thing. Where it's just like, go fuck yourself. Like, I'm gonna fight you. Like, you bitch. Like, bro, you bitch. Like, it was just the same thing every time. Like, calling everyone piece of shit, which everyone used on this show. Everyone, all the heels were like, you could tell. I guess Russo wrote everyone's promos. I guess everyone called everyone a piece of shit or like bullshit. Like,
Russo declares war on Flair and says, "You are the piece of shit from the bottom of my shoe."
And that was like the first,
like
the
weird monotone. Like, there's no real inflection to it. It's just like, "You are a piece of shit." He sounds like he's doing like a local furniture ad.
That's
like,
what this show opened
down
up for.
To Russo's, we have new furniture. That's what he's only. It's about Flair being a piece of shit.
That's what the show opened with. First lines uttered on this show by Russo. Ric Flair, you're a piece of shit.
Yeah. It was the start of the show. So yeah, they showed the package, basically explaining everything that Dan went through. What I did notice is, that pissed me off the most about it, was that they're still using goddamn spray paint. They cannot do that. Every single hero does the same thing. They gang up on everybody, and they spray paint letters on them.
It worked once.
It worked. Like, them pretty New Blood, like, on, I think it was on Hogan or something.
And,
like,
they brought back the white Hummer from last summer, which was a quote.
That's the white Hummer from last summer!
Because Eric is the character of white for Hulk Hogan with a Hummer.
Yeah.
I guess that
storyline's resolved now. Because
yeah,
it was Eric Bischoff, right?
Yeah.
So there you go.
Always was Bischoff.
And so, the show opens with a goddamn backstage segment. Like, not wrestling, not any. It's not, we gotta go and start with a skit.
I liked. The backstage segment was great because it was just them hanging out. Tori, it was just like. All the women at this point in WCW were just, like, they're props. They just sat there and said nothing. And Billy Kidman
might as well be blow up dolls.
Yeah, Billy Kidman, who's like not ready for this at all. Like, I get why. Like, I kind of like Billy Kidman fan, but like, I didn't think he was there. Billy Kidman just like nonchalantly just suggests, like, why don't we just murder him? Like, that's what we're just doing. Like, let's kill him.
Yeah, we'll just get the white dude. Yo, Eric, I'm the kid. But that's a thing he said.
Yeah, he's like,
yo, I'm the. Billy? Yo, I'm the kid. Let's just fire up the Hummer again and finish what we started. That's a quote.
Billy
Kidman.
It's not like Billy Kidman had great things to work with, but his delivery's like awful.
He's the absolute wrong guy for this.
Yes.
Like, it's him because he's the cruiserweight.
It's like, oh, Billy Kidman is such a great wrestler. And I'm like, yeah.
And like,
sure. But is he a good promo? Hell no.
Yeah. If people looked at Cesaro, like, who's the guy who'd be a comparison for Kidman? Like, a guy who's okay, not great, but he's okay, he's kind of athletic, and he can't do anything else.
Like on WWE?
Yeah, Yeah, like everyone in WWE is kind of better than him.
Jack Swagger.
Yeah, but Swagger was pretty
good. He's like a Dolph Ziggler.
Yeah,
he's
but
like
that's
a decent wrestler, but bad talker.
But Dolph's better than him. But kind of what I was thinking too.
Yeah, you know what? But it's kind of the same idea.
It's like this guy who thinks, like, somebody thinks he's, like, the great worker of his day, and it's like, well, he's okay, he's pretty good. I don't know about this, though. And he's just sort of shoved into a spot. But see, Dolph would do this spot really well. That's the other thing. If Dolph was, like, the cocky heel.
Remember that Christmas segment with AJ Lee? Like, that was great, I saw that.
But like, if Dolph was, like, the hand, if Dolph was doing the Seth Rollins thing, I think he'd do it well. He's terrible at being a babyface. Kidman's just not any character. Like, he's a middle-of-the-card, decent match guy.
He has no charisma in terms of delivery or promo. It's just not there at all.
And you can't stop forgetting that he's the guy who used to scratch himself.
Yeah.
And now he's the guy who was on drugs, that was his thing.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I do meth. Just so you say no. Like, that's why I'm scratched. I'm like, I do meth.
He used to be in ratty jean shorts and scratched himself. And with the announcers going, whoa, he's got lice. That's why he's scratching himself.
Well, he was on drugs. It was supposed to be druggy.
But the announcers couldn't say that because it's Turner.
Yeah.
But now he's wearing, like, ooh, super fancy Tommy Hilfiger jean shorts. Like, he's the best in the world.
Adidas tearaway pants. That was a little bit later. I think Adidas tearaway pants was like 97. But whatever. I had some tearaway pants, bro.
You mean the zipper things around the knees?
Yeah, it wasn't zipper. It was buttons. Buttons were the cool ones.
No, we had the zippers.
Yeah, well, zippers. Get that. No, it's buttons. You're an athlete, bro. You had to do some athlete shit. So they're talking there, and what's even maybe this even worse is that like there's no room for in this because it was him versus Hogan, and like if there's anyone people dislike, which is the most shocking thing about him going back to WWF was those reactions because like 2000 Hogan face was like even when I was like that age, I was about 13, and like it was just awful.
It was a different audience though.
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing that we've lost now, is that we kind of look at wrestling fans as all this, like, one group. I guess we go indie fans versus mainstream fans. But back then, there was a clear WCW fan base, and there was a clear WWF fan base. And the WWF fans, like, when Hogan came back, they were like, yay, we get to see Hogan again. We haven't
seen Hogan again. Let's talk about WCW. He was awful. And no one wanted him in L.A. And, Hogan, the weird worst part about this stuff is, like, Hogan didn't even do anything at this point. Like, he barely wrestled. He barely moved. He kind of came in and, like, was dominant and like he was even worse than 97.
He was kind of trying to reinvent himself as a modern guy though, because he's not wearing. Okay, he's dropped the Hollywood thing, but he's also dropped the red and yellow, and he's not quite figured out what his image should be. So he's just walking around in like
camo,
cut off vests and black jeans, and trying to like throw people through tables. And this is after the famous episode of Thunder that had, which we're going to review that at some point. The famous episode of Thunder where they banned referees and everybody had to count their own pins. and the end of the episode of Thunder, it ended with Hogan taking a damn powerbomb through a table and the camera missing it.
Wow.
But, like, Hogan was, like, making this effort, like, well, this is what the kids do now. They take powerbombs through tables, and they throw people through tables. So I'm gonna powerbomb guys, and then people can powerbomb me. That's what I'll do. Hogan's probably crippled because of the year 2000. He was probably fine, and then he spent 2000 trying to be a modern, tough guy and ruined himself.
Possible.
Yeah. It's just really weird. Like, and maybe that's part of why it came up, where it was like Hogan, but without even the Hogan flair. So like, even like, it was even worse. Like, I didn't care for Hogan. I hated when he came back and tried to do the red and yellow again. Like, it was like one thing where it's like, oh great, he was in red and yellow. That's pretty cool, I guess.
Yeah.
I guess he's not running for president.
It's just like an old man flailing to try to get his gimmick back.
It made him look older. It really did. Like, a lot of the guys from, like, the 80s kind of got away from it because they treated themselves more like a nostalgic act and for people that couldn't wrestle. Like, so you had a bunch of, like, especially in the 90s where you had, like, people wrestle and just kind of do their own stick, and that was kind of the thing. Like, oh, we get to see them do their own stick, but, like, Hogan was already past his prime. He couldn't wrestle anyway, so it was just him coming back, and just it was this, like, old man named Best says stuff.
Yeah.
And speaking of old men making themselves look older, Ric Flair starts wrestling in like he's at the golf course.
Yeah.
Well, it was a cheat fight, you see. Before we do that, we have to confirm that the announcers, who Mark and MTS also, but they announced that the DQ rule would be relaxed a little bit.
not gotten rid of. It's just going to be relaxed.
Which just spouted to me, just yelled at me, being like, "Hey, we're going to have run-ins, but we're going to win the face. We're going to make sure that the heels don't get disqualified. Just so you know, that's what's going to happen. We're going to make sure the heels don't get disqualified."
All right, so we can talk about, like,
expect running
a dress code tonight. Tony and Hudson are both wearing blazers with a colored T-shirt underneath it, and Derek's wearing the same thing. And I found that very funny when they're all sitting on panel, and it's Tony and Hudson basically wore the same thing, and then Mark Madden's dressed like an unscrupulous car dealer.
They all look weird. Mark Madden was at his most annoying.
God, yeah. You know, with Mark Madden, I finally get what's with Mark Madden. He's, like, trying to be, like, a really heelish announcer, and he, like, borrows from every heel announcer ever. But when he does his announcing, it's like he tries too hard to be a heel announcer. It's like I don't believe him at all. It's like he's every heel announcer ever, like, crammed up to 10. And I just don't take him seriously one bit at all.
And he's trying way too hard to get himself.
Yes, he's not funny in any way.
There's a lot of, like, late-era Jesse Ventura in him, where it's like, okay, I no longer give a shit about any of the storylines going on in front of me. What can I do to get myself over? And that no one wants to hear announcers doing that.
But at least if Jesse Ventura was good at getting himself over, Madden just sucked.
Madden's like Billy Graham as an announcer. Because Billy Graham was like a shitty ripoff of just funny that. Billy Graham tries to rip off Ventura and doesn't do it well.
I like Superstar Billy Graham more than Mark Madden. And I remember that one SummerSlam he announced, and he wasn't, I wouldn't say he was like awesome, but he was fine.
So that's our announcers. Two goobers. Two goober corporate suck ups and a guy who would try to sell you an 87 Yugo.
And I want to bring up something because you guys were talking about earlier, like, about things that annoy you in wrestling. And for me, it's always that when announcers go, "Oh, this isn't going to be a wrestling match. It's going to be a fight. It's going to be. It's not going to be a cash as catch can match." It's like,
it's just so you know, it's kind
of
sucked.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, so you're telling me that it's not going to be a good match? So then why would I get involved in it? Why would I like it? I came here to see wrestling, and you're telling me we're not going to see wrestling.
Yeah, I'm paying you some wrestling. Why are you denying me the wrestling?
That's what the announcers were saying at the start of the show. I'm like, well, yeah, great. Thanks for telling me we're not going to see wrestling tonight. And for the most part, we didn't even see that much wrestling. We saw a lot of brawls.
Well, yeah, you only have 2 minutes per match.
Yeah.
The average match time is about 5 minutes tonight. There's 14 of them.
Yeah.
But yeah, let's get started with the first match. Yeah, a lot of our, like, I don't know if we're going to get into a lot of details with matches themselves because they're all very super short.
Yeah.
One of our shorter reviews, really. All things considered. But yeah, it started off, so basically, yeah, there's three tournaments. One for the tag team, one for the United States, and one for the world title. So the match starts off. First match is Team Package, which is Ric Flair and Lex Luger.
That's how sad Ric Flair has gotten. He's just the other guy in Team Package.
Yes.
The other guy. And he did. He just kind of wandered out. Versus the Mama Lutes. And we'll get to how that changes in a second. But first off, let me just kind of say once again, I have a soft spot for Lex Luger. I don't know why.
I agree with you on this. This show made me agree with you.
And I love his entrance. It's just like...
His entrance was longer than the match.
I love the Lex Luger entrance. The crowd even said, because though Liz still looked really good at this point. You can tell kind of the drugs would take her toll, and she seemed like she was sweating, she was kind of pasty a little bit. Like, it was just kind of making me super sad, and then I'm just like, oh yeah, that's why I don't really like Lex Luger.
Okay.
Yeah, Ric Flair comes out for this match. Like, Ric Flair cuts a promo before the match. And you're like, ah, I'm screaming at Ric Flair! And,
yep, it's Ric Flair thing.
And it's like, it's a street fight, so I'm in my street clothes! Woo, 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 Russo!
Which,
that's it.
Before we get going, let me just say that I hate that street fights nowadays. People don't wrestle in the street clothes.
Yeah.
I think that, like, 2 years ago, it was like a CM Punk Chris Jericho match that I saw, but it actually came up with their street clothes. That was, like, the last time. Like, come on, where's the pants? That's the idea. It's supposed to be a street fight.
But Ric Flair was doing this every week at this point. Like, this was, like, before this pay-per-view, he had the match with Shane Douglas, which was 10 years in the making that they played it up, and then out comes Ric Flair in a golf shirt, and everybody's like, oh.
Yeah, Ric Flair has basically given up, and if you listen to everything that interview, especially, like, the post, like, if you listen to 2001 Ric Flair interviews, like, even now, he's kind of says the same thing, but especially then, where he's just like, he just talks about how he hated 2000, how he hated Russo, and how she hated Bischoff, and you can just tell from here that he just doesn't care.
So he's just stopped working out, because he doesn't care, and he's wrestling every week in his golf shirts, and in his nice pants, and in his Italian shoes, and then some people get added to this match.
Yeah, so Vince Russo comes out and says, he's like, I'm going to make it even because, you know, the veterans are facing the new guys. It's just such, I understand he's supposed to be a heel, but it made no sense.
No.
And so here comes my favorite in the world, the Harris Boys. So it was 4-on-1. The match is like 5 minutes long.
Okay, and you know what the thing that annoyed me the most? They said before this that this was going to be a very lenient rules. You know, no DQ, or very lenient DQs or whatever. So they proceeded to do a 4-on-2 handicap match with tags. They didn't brawl. They just did a straight-up tag team match. They politely tagged each other in. And then there was even a ref spot. You know, they did one spot where Flair got tagged, but the ref held him back because he didn't see it. It's like that kind of stuff. It's like, so why are you telling me this is going to be like...
Mind.
Yeah. Like, why are you telling me that this is going to be, like, a crazy show, and then the first match you do is a match with tags and ref spots? Like, duh.
Yeah.
Stupid.
That just made my blood boil about this match. Lex Luger is the only guy in this match dressed as a wrestler.
Yeah.
Goddamn Ric Flair dressed as a golf course. The Harris Boys are in their fancy, like, they're in their church shoes. And they're stupid shirts, but damn Mamalukes are wearing pants. And then it's like Lex Luger just walked in thinking he was going to be at a wrestling match and then realized, oh no, this is stupid.
Think about it. It's in 2000, where we're seeing a match where Lex Luger is the one who cares the most.
Yeah.
And there's a spot in this match that I love. At some point, everything's sort of breaking down. Lex has done the hot tag in a 5-minute match. And he's supposed to be running wild on everybody, but then one of the Mamalukes, the one who dressed like a lady, Vito takes 12 days to climb this turnbuckle. And he's supposed to climb the turnbuckle and come off the top rope, and then Lex turn around and gut shot him. You know, we've all seen that spot a million times. But he takes so long that Lex turns around to do the thing, and then he's not there, and then Lex just has to stare at him and stare at him, and then Lex puts his hands out. Puts his hands out to the crowd and goes, what the fuck am I doing with this? And then Vito jumps, and then Lex hits him in the stomach. And then Lex just throws up his arms and goes, what the hell, guys? Lex Luger was the best worker in a match in 2000.
And they were faces now. Like, Lex, the total package gimmick as a face makes no fucking sense.
No.
But I defy you to not love Lex Luger after this match, because you're just like, God, you know what? Sometimes we're all in a shitty working situation where nobody's doing what they're supposed to. I'm with you, Package. I'm right there with you.
Yeah, and Total Package got the win there with the submission.
The torture rack.
The torture rack, which is classic moves. It doesn't look great on TV, I don't think. But I still love Torture.
When Lex Luger starts getting mad at how shitty you are in a match, like Lex Luger in the year 2000, not even like 89 Lex, the year 2000 Lex going, God, you suck. Oh man, you should quit.
Yeah.
Put on a dress, one or the other.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I noticed that there's some really stupid signs in the crowd. There's one middle-aged lady that had a sign that said "Troll Package This," which I get. I'm just going to be trying to say it didn't really make any sense. So I guess she's talking. Yeah, okay, she wants Lex to do him. But there was another guy in the front row who had a rest in peace, Andre the Giant.
I saw this. Yeah. I guess everybody missed Andre the Giant.
I missed him.
7 years later, I'm gonna go to this show and just show my support for Andre in a place where he really never wrestled.
He would have been the most over guy on this show. He probably was still anyway.
Andre the Giant would have been more over.
Because this is like of all things I remember that sign the most on this show. So he might have been the most over guy on the show.
Andre is over because he's not.
Yeah.
We forgot to mention, this show's coming from Chicago, one of the traditionally hottest markets for wrestling in the world. They only got 12,000 people in the United Center, which holds like 20,000. So not great. And they've like blocked off half the arena. They've got the set.
Some of those camera shots were pretty sad.
Camera shots. They just show off that nobody's there.
Yeah, like
so
when
the camera pans back and you see that the stage is set up like at half court.
Like when they were doing the three count match and they were like trying to find girls that were like remotely interested in what they were doing. That was pretty sad.
Girl who wanted to get
one girl. Yeah.
Because that girl was having a good time.
Yeah.
So that happened. So there's a mic. Awesome.
This is my favorite thing in the whole show, other than Lex Luger.
Oh my god, no! He rambled, and then like Bam Bam came up being like, "What's going on?" And it's like nothing, and Bam Bam just walked away. And he kind of like, "That's what I do."
No! You're not giving this the credit it deserves.
Mike
Austin. Mike Austin is maybe my favorite wrestler. And the dog loves Mike Austin too. He's letting us all know. Mike Austin is doing his promo. Like, if you ever heard Mike Austin's promo style, he just yelled. Like, he was not very confident, I guess. He didn't follow the Jake Roberts rule of keep your words soft and then people will listen. Like, Mike Austin just screamed.
He had very goofy delivery for a 2000 promo.
He's a wrestler, Ernest Miller. He just screams, "I'm going to kill all his lives! I'm going to kill him!"
It was like an 80s promo in 2000, and it didn't work.
And then Bam Bam just sort of wanders up like an asshole and goes, "Hey, who's this jabroni? What are you talking to him for?" And then Mike Austin like comes back and is like, "Wait, I'm not a jabroni. I'm not saying nothing to you." Bam Bam turns around, and then Mike Austin just clobbers him in the back of the head and goes, "Yeah, I was talking about you, Bam Bam. Don't you forget it."
Yeah.
I loved it. I was talking about you. Like, no one ever says that.
It was a swerve.
Yeah, it was a swerve, but it was a good swerve. It was an immediate payoff.
Yeah.
And Mike Austin. Awesome is his name. And that victim felt pain. The only people who felt pain in the next match was the audience.
Everybody. I hated this so much.
So the next match was the Mouth of the South, Jimmy Hart versus radio personality Mancal Mueller.
He's probably like the radio personality I probably hate the most. Like he's just like all the worst parts of like he's like the worst parts of bad like I don't like most of those shock jocks. I don't like Opie and Anthony. I don't like Howard Stern for the most part. Like I hate them. Like but like Madcap is the worst of all of them. And he's fighting in a match that no one cares about.
Yeah.
So it's Like, he's like a, so he's like a shock jock. He's on Fox News and all that stuff. Where he's got an annoying voice. He's just a giant jackass. And he seemed to like being a jerk for an absolute, the storyline for the video seemed to be used that he was being a jerk for absolutely no reason. A whole bunch. And then, I guess that was, so he's going to challenge most of those Jimmy Hart for a match. So Jimmy Hart comes out, and then, with the Howard Stern shirt or whatever. And then Mad Cow comes out to the, what essentially may be the worst song I've ever heard in my entire life. It was like, if early 2000s new metal was made into a parody song, it would be this.
Yeah, that's what it was.
And just to clue you in on this period of time, Mad Cow was wearing a boy band suck t-shirt. New metal guys who listen to Nickelback throwing shade on Backstreet Boys.
He came out, like, the problem with it, like, you could tell that Mad Cow thought he was so cool. He came out with his, like the most, like, lame sunglasses, like, these, like, Jeff Jarrett-like sunglasses, but bigger. It was a bunch of, like girls, like all the super girls, and, like, this stupid song, and he's just coming up starting, like, it just, oh, he just came out off so bad.
So here's the deal with Mad Cow. Howard Stern was a legitimate radio phenomenon. One of the biggest comedy shows in the history of radio. Obviously, he spawned a lot of copycats, especially in certain markets. Like, on the West Coast, it was hard for Howard to get over because he had to be tape delayed because of the time difference. So on the West Coast, the guy who got really big stealing Howard's act was a guy named Tom Likas. And you had guys all over the country who would steal his act. Like in Florida, Bubba the Love Sponge was doing Howard's act, only grosser. And then in Chicago, you had Mad Cow doing it. And the reason why Mad Cow was able to do it is because Chicago is the weirdest radio market in America. They will not listen to anybody who's not from Chicago. Ever. Rush Limbaugh never rated there. Glenn Beck's never rated there. Sean Hannity's never rated there. Doesn't matter who's big national people, they will not listen to you in Chicago. They've got to hear a Chicago guy. And Mad Cow was the Chicago local guy, so he was doing Howard's act to people who would not listen to someone who's not coming out of Chicago, because that's the weirdness of Chicago.
That's radio is an odd thing.
And because of that, he started pushing himself all across the country. He's like, he's the voice of Chicago. So when WCW needed to help sell their show, well, we'll get Mad Cow and we'll do an angle on his show, and then he'll promote it, and then all these fucking half-wits who listen to his show will come to the arena. Obviously, it didn't work so great because they had a half-empty arena.
Yeah.
So the whole point of Mad Cow failed. And then they come up there and they have a stinky, terrible match with a tiny little guy. And Mad Cow is the puniest looking ever lived. Like, if Howard Stern was in a match, if you've ever seen Howard Stern, he's like 6'12".
He's pretty tall.
And, like, and yeah. Like, 90s Howard Stern, you know, he had a look.
Like, Howard was an imposing looking, like, if Howard was going to do this thing, you'd go, oh, yeah, Howard Stern, that's it. Mad Cow was, like, 5'9", and he's a petulant little weirdo. And he has a reputation in comedy circles that you never wanted to do Mad Cow's show, because he would sit there and not talk to you and then point when you were supposed to talk and not set you up. Or not do anything. You just point, and then you're just supposed to talk and be funny. And then if you weren't, he'd kick you off the show and be an asshole. So he's a jerk in real life. He's a jerk as a character. And this is a misery. An absolute misery.
Yeah.
And so I guess the whole thing is to get some guy over named Hale, who I literally cannot remember ever existing.
You forgot the most important part of this match. Hale.
God.
Hale.
Jimmy Hart went through this thing where he was, like, managing giant guys who had no talent, but who would have gotten over in the 80s, and Hale was his next guy.
I put something here about wellness test that I won't go into. Let's just say that. I don't know if he would pass one.
I don't think he can pass a spelling test, let alone a drug test.
Who knows? Maybe he's a well-educated man. We just don't know. We never saw him again after this.
Does anybody know what happened to Hale?
No. I think he's like a former baseball player, maybe. I don't know. Does he even have a Wikipedia page? Let me see.
So this was miserable. There was a million different run-ins from Mancal's dumb friends. And then Hale showed up and threw him over the top, and then somehow Mancal won.
Oh, you know what happened here? He had that match with Diamond Dallas Page on Thunder. Because he was a masked guy named The Machine at first.
Oh my, he's The Machine?
Yes.
The Machine.
Yes. This was a few months before. And he had a match with DDP. And everybody remembers the spot where I think DDP crotched him and he proceeds to like jump off the top rope, land on the rope, and like did the biggest oversell of a crotch bump I've ever seen. It's like really amazing. Like you need to watch it on YouTube. It's like the weirdest thing.
That's maybe the best thing that ever happened on Thunder.
Yeah.
It's lived forever. Yeah. Okay. If he's that guy, then thanks, Hail Machine. Thanks for that moment.
Yeah.
It just jumped straight up in the air.
It's funny. He did play baseball and had a tryout with the Orioles.
Okay.
And then Jimmy Hart brought him in as the next big thing. Because,
Jimmy Hart thought you had talent in the 2000s.
You had to be tall. You had to be like this tall guy you could feud with Hulk Hogan.
All right. In the history of wrestling, Randy Savage and Dusty Rhodes are probably the only two baseball players who've ever been workers worth a damn. Why is that? Why can the baseball players not be professional wrestlers? You've seen basketball players be pretty decent. You've seen tons of football players. The damn wrestling business is lousy with football players.
I don't know what kind of like charismatic figures you hear about in baseball.
Those eggs shake.
That's true. A lot of baseball players are really dour jerks.
Like in the NBA, there's a ton of charismatic guys. In the NFL, there are too. But like baseball, like I don't really hear about like. I hear, like, guys breaking records, but I don't hear about guys, like, being out there or being charismatic.
Yeah, Ricky Henderson's probably the only one ever, and they all acted like he was an alien.
Yeah.
I don't know, it's just a different thing. You definitely hear that, but not as much. It's not as flashy at this point.
But,
right?
But is it something to do with, like, baseball doesn't put out good athletes? Is that the other issue?
I don't know if that's true. I just think
a lot of baseball players are tubby.
I think it's just of a flash. I just think that it's not as flashy as a sport. Baseball is kind of a very nuanced thing.
Baseball is a sport where they beat into you, don't be flashy.
Yeah.
Like basketball, they have to try to beat. Well, basketball, they try to beat into you, you should be flashy, but it doesn't work.
Baseball has a terrible track record with producing wrestlers.
Yeah.
I don't know. But. What I do know is that the next match is just bad. Scott Steiner versus.
Well, this was awesome because of the WWE Network ads.
Okay, you're going to have to explain this to me. So this is a 3-minute match. So what did they edit?
They edited his theme song into his Slam Jam song.
you know what though?
Saturday!
Yeah.
Okay,
you know what?
I did notice that, but why? I think he didn't have his emergency song.
I think what happened is when they, like, obviously a lot of people made a big deal. Like, when the network started, they didn't have a deal with the guy who wrote the songs on Slam Jam. And all those guys had to get their songs edited. I think whatever video intern they told to put the Slam Jam stuff back in didn't realize that not all those guys were using that theme forever. And just went, oh, Scott Steiner, well, better put it back in because we edited it out.
You know what, though? I think it's, I think Scott Steiner was out for some of 2000 with an injury. And then he came back, and he couldn't use the NWO music because the NWO was gone. So I guess they replaced it with his Steinerized music.
Was that in real life?
I think so.
WWE Network thing.
I think so, because I think I remember watching some of this on another stream that I watch online. I remember he used it for a bit. It didn't last long, but I do remember he came back and he had the sunrise music.
That's amazing.
Which is amazing, yes.
That's funny. Yeah, I remember him using that for a little bit, but because it was this was remember this was just before his bigger push, so like he was kind of it's kind of before when they decided, all right, we're going to go with him, which was one of the better.
He still had that cloud hanging over him from where he tried to where he threatened to murder Ric Flair. They're like, okay, maybe let's not push him all the way yet.
Yeah,
let's let that get a little bit more in the rear view.
And well, they kind of did anyway, but he was in the United States bracket, not the world title. So he won blind disqualification because the wall decided to choke slam a referee.
Whit Johnson of TNA fame.
Yeah, sure. TNA fame.
The referee with the bald head and the shorts.
Was he the one who did that bump with a Bully Ray where he like had a seizure and fell down? Was that the guy? Okay. Yeah, that's what I remember him for.
About him and old Dixie.
I believe this. Yeah, so there's nothing really to say about that match.
It was terrible, and it was even more infuriating that it ended on a DQ.
Yeah.
the wall running the awful things wherever he goes. The next match was Mike Awesome against James Miller.
Well, before you get to this, we need to mention that Mean Gene at one point shouts at the cat in a backstage interview that he stole his girlfriend.
This is in the Mean Gene Doesn't Care era of Cranky Mean Gene.
No, they made this gimmick where he's literally mean. Literally Mean Gene
Oakland. Hey, be fair.
They said mean
really,
things.
The cat was being really mean to him, called him a devil cracker or whatever. and then Mean Gene goes, oh, that'd steal your girlfriend. Which, yeah, probably would.
Yeah. It was dumb. Just like this match was dumb.
This was stupid.
A boring match. It basically ended when Cat Miller decided he needed to dance for no reason.
We had the same match because I saw Mike Awesome diving over guardrail and doing suicide.
Oh, he was the only good thing about this match.
Mike Awesome was outstanding, and then he takes a bump for some reason, and the cat shows up. So, like, Bam Bam has subbed in for the cat, but then the cat shows up, and no, I'm fine. I'm going to do some dance.
Wait, let me explain this, because it makes zero sense, but I'll try to explain. So, they did a segment before this where Bam Bam Bigelow beat up the cat, because I guess in retaliation for what happened before this, earlier with the segment between Awesome and Bigelow.
I think he wanted to beat up the cat so he could take his place.
Yes, I think that's what happened. So, he comes out, and they have a match because whatever. And then the cat comes out and says he wants to dance, even though he's supposed to actually be in the match. So he does the dance, and nobody gives a shit. And then Mike Awesome lays him out, I think. Yes, Mike.
With a clothesline.
Yes.
So stiff. It made my hair stand up on my arms.
Yes, that he pinned him with a frog splash. So his offense was good, but everything else about this match absolutely made no sense. This was WCW.
Mike Awesome is still in that that happens later. Mike Awesome is still in this early phase when he's gotten to WCW where they're treating him right, but even then it's like you're seeing glimpses of, oh, they're going to fuck with Mike Awesome.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you saw that later on. You definitely did.
And Mike Awesome fan in me just getting infuriated all over again. Yeah. It's 2000.
I didn't write anything for the next match. It was Shane Douglas and Buff Bagwell versus Harlem Heat 2000. I just wrote the Buff sucks, and that was all I wrote.
Let's see.
This is maybe the most appropriate tag teams ever, because two guys who never really had a lot of charisma, but pretended to, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
1 minute and 41 seconds was the match length.
It's two guys, like, imitating what charisma is supposed to be like.
Yeah.
Shane Douglas and Buff.
I just put that it took Douglas a while to lift up Stevie Ray for a Pittsburgh plunge. That's all I put down.
And then Shane did the fucking Dick Flair thing again.
Yes, he does that. Like, all of his WCW promos were about Ric Flair. I was watching the end of WCW, like, in 2001, actually, like, the week before they went out. And you know what Shane Douglas was talking about? The three glasses. Yeah. Like I understand, like, maybe he had, like, problems with Ric Flair when he was in WCW. But you know what? If I went to ECW and all my promos were about Ric Flair, and Ric Flair did this to me, and Ric Flair did that to me, and then I go back to WCW and I talk about how Ric Flair did this to me, you know what? I would sound like the most, like, what's the word, like, obsessive?
Yeah, you sound like the saddest.
He wanted so much to feud with Ric Flair. He wanted that so badly. And he would always talk about him. It's like, dude. You know, it kind of made sense here because later he'd face Flair in a final for the tag team titles, but every other promo from this guy is about Ric Flair.
I think the thing with Shane Douglas was he was never a very comfortable talker and he was never very good at it. And this one thing he did, and Shane Douglas was in WCW a long time and never got over it.
No. He used a lot of bad words.
Over at ECW cutting these promos, and so he's like, well, this is what people want to hear, so I'll just do these forever.
He used lots of bad words, and he talked about Ric Flair, like, in a shoot manner. That's what got him over.
And then it's like, and that worked for an ECW audience, because sure. They were all, like, a bunch
they,
of...
They were hardcore fans that didn't like WCW.
Yeah.
And didn't like the WWF. You know, it really helps him that he went to WWF, and he didn't get over, so he came back, and he ripped them, too. It really helped him. You know, in ECW...
Shawn Michaels, what was his Dick Flair and...
Dick Flair. I don't know.
Probably a gay joke about Shawn Michaels. I don't know. Shane Douglas is like the saddest thing, like, whenever you see him. You're just like, oh my god, Shane.
Yeah.
And they were both really sad, and they both never got over, and Buff Wagwell partially killed WCW forever. but they did win this match for the tag team titles.
You know, reading about Buff Bagwell in the WWF is really funny. You know, the sense of entitlement he had when he went to the WWF. It's so funny.
Yeah, this guy's like, just the biggest star of WCW.
Yes.
He headlined the later day house shows, because at that point nobody under contract would go on house shows. So he headlined with Buff Bagwell. So he started thinking, oh, I'm a headliner, instead of, yeah, you're going last in an arena with 700 people in it that used to have 10,000 people in it.
WCW host shows post Nitro were really nothing ever cooked to me anyway.
I mean, just like, you know, everything the mentality you need to have when you go to WWF is that everything you've done before, that doesn't mean shit. It doesn't. Especially to them. Because if you have that sense of entitlement, you're going to be eaten alive very fast.
It's a weird thing where you kind of you have to act super confident with Vince, or else he thinks you're a geek.
Yeah.
But then you can't act confident at all with any of the other workers.
Yeah.
You have to be like Mr. Humble with all the other wrestlers, and then like the alpha of all alphas around Vince. Which, yeah. I guess that's a hard thing for guys to figure out, because it's a goddamn nut house back over there. But that's the way you gotta pull it, and Buff was not. Buff did not get the mix right. Buff was the original Mystico.
Yeah, he just didn't botch as many stuff.
Yeah. He botched the entire WCW kickoff.
Oh, yeah.
He didn't do as many botches, but the one...
The one that counted the most. Yeah. Because, you know, I'm watching 2001 WWF right now, like... I think they're up to SummerSlam. It's like, boy, there sure isn't a lot of star power here. It's all about the... Shockingly, it's all about the McMahons when it comes to the alliance. Yeah.
They wouldn't do that.
That seems to be the theme for the last 15 years of WWE programming. Isn't that funny how it works out? You know?
Well, they're the biggest stars. So
yeah, sure. Because, you know, you think... They're going to be, like, taken off TV? No. I mean, they've had for periods of time, but now it's like, who are the biggest stars on Raw right now? It's Triple H and Stephanie whenever they feel like showing up.
Oh, no, it's not. They're barely on. They're, like, half on anymore. I'm anti the storyline, but they're not this whole they're the biggest stars thing. It's just so ridiculous.
No, they are. They could be the biggest favorite faces, and they could be the biggest heels. You'll be on the same show.
No, they're big places there to talk to Seth Rollins. Like, if you want to tell me that the third doesn't need to be on TV or that no one else is being portrayed, well, I'll agree. But yeah, this idea, like this Triple H hate for everything, is just getting so crazy. Like,
I think they sucked up airtime that could be going to somebody else in that role.
If the show is 3 hours and it's such so long, then having them do be on TV for like 5 to 10 minutes isn't a big deal.
But they're always in prime spots. WWE has structured their hours so that people know which time slots are important and which ones aren't. And they're always in the important ones when they're there.
Yeah.
And that could be somebody else that could be elevated.
No one's elevated. That's
the big problem. Nobody ever moves up in WWE.
No.
But it's not that. That's not the reason. People talk like Triple H is the reason.
Well, no, it's
Vince badly booking everyone else.
But part of the reason is that he looks at certain guys and like, well, these are the important ones, so we got to give them TV time. When it's like, well, everybody has the end of their day.
I don't buy it. It's only an excuse.
Is the authority ego ever going to go anywhere? Are they just people?
That's the big issue.
Is it just
there and nothing ever happens?
Like they did the angle at Survivor Series last year, then they came back, and now they just sort of show up whenever they feel like it.
Yeah. They need to be gone, but I don't think they're problem like maybe like problem 99 out of like the top 100. Anyway, but back on this about WCW. So the next match there was probably the only good match of the show. I'm gonna say.
It was the best match on the show.
Well, why don't you go through this there, Brian?
Okay. So, they had the best match they could in under 7 minutes, because this lasted like 6 minutes. It was just a nice, hot-paced back-and-forth match. Not many rest holds. I mean, there's a few, but there's a lot of action throughout. And Sting scored the pinfall with the Scorpion Death Drop. But the thing that I found funny the most is they botched the handshake that you'd have if there's two baby faces, like two over baby faces, and they would have a match and they would shake hands. They didn't do that here. What they did was Sting left and Booker T was like trying to grab him saying, hey, come back. And Sting's like, no. And then Booker T goes out and he like shoves Sting or something and they have a stare down and Booker T's like, let's go back to the ring. And Sting's like, okay. So they go back to the ring while the announcers are trying to say like, oh, they're going to wrestle again. Something like that. So they get in there and then Booker T extends his hand and Sting shakes his hand, and that's the good sportsmanship kind of thing to that.
Yeah, the deal kind of here was that Booker was the one baby face in the New Blood.
Yeah.
The one baby face who was like, well, I'm not, I want to get ahead, but I don't want to get ahead doing whatever counts.
That plays into a storyline later, too, when Russo says, I didn't like that handshake, let's go, I want you to do something for me. And then they go to Dustin Rhodes, who had him, I think, interfered in a hardcore match later. And Russo just yells at him about gold dust or something and then fires him. And Booker T's just like there trying to console him. Like, is that you want him to console Dustin Rhodes after you fire him? Is that what the favor you wanted?
Yeah.
Like that was weird.
So they did a spot that was kind of like they wanted to protect Booker because obviously I think they had ideas for Booker.
Yeah.
And the way they beat him was they were fighting on the outside and then Booker gets whipped into the timekeeper with a bell and just clanks his head off his bell. And I think they wanted to, like the story they want to tell is that he got knocked loopy there and that's why he couldn't win the match. He was like fighting through a concussion or something. And that was their way of protecting Booker. And I always thought Sting and Booker had great chemistry with each other. There's a feud in like late 95, 96 between Sting and Luger and the Harlem Heat. And a lot of those matches are Luger being, that was like the famous Luger as a crazy heel who's friends with a babyface that a lot of people have talked about. It's like that was one of Luger's best periods of the 90s. And then Sting and Booker just tearing the house down while Stevie Ray stands on the outside trying not to screw anything up.
Like standing there, he'll screw up later.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, he dared you.
So, They always work well together because they're both like really tall, good athletes. So they can do a lot of stuff with each other that guys their size aren't really naturally supposed to do. And so, but this was like a 15-minute match where they chopped out all the rest holds, and so it just sort of flies by. It's almost like watching a video game match.
Yeah, they 6 minutes.
They just do thing after thing after thing without stopping. Which,
yeah, the match was fine. I mean, it wasn't like it's not amazing, but it was so much better than everything else. But yeah, so good match. Yeah, so Sting was looking for the team, like Brian said, and then they did that weird thing. They bumped fists, and then Mark Madden called him gay. And that was.
Because it's the year 2000, and that's the thing they can do.
I mean, to be fair, Mark Madden was a heel. But next match was
Apollo shit.
Yeah, it was awful and long. So basically, they fought, and then nothing happened for a long, long time. And then Hulk Hogan,
Vampiro, and Billy Kidd.
Yeah. And then so Hulk Hogan came and like beat Billy Kidman up, and then Vampiro got the pin, and that was it.
Well, and then Hogan goes chasing after Bischoff.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, the single.
This is a backstage segment that you can tell killed the crowd.
Oh, yeah.
The crowd wasn't enjoying themselves that much, but the crowd dies with this segment. So that's a sign that you screwed up. But basically, Hogan goes chasing after Bischoff. The Russo leaves him all alone in their heel lair. And so there's nobody there when Hogan finally finds him. Hogan grabs Bischoff by the throat, starts choking him to death. Then Russo comes in with a bunch of cops. And then one of the cops pull him away, and then one of the cops pulls his gun on Hogan. And the whole crowd just goes, oh,
yeah.
No.
They thought this was supposed to be like this shocking angle, like somebody took out a gun on Hulk Hogan. And instead, people just like groaned because it was so stupid.
I don't know if they groaned or if they just genuinely went, oh, well, that's horrifying. That's not what I want to see on television. Or, like, that's not what I come to wrestling.
Like if I saw that, I wouldn't buy it for 10 seconds. Yeah.
I don't know if they...
Yeah, they pulled them and they went backstage and then they came back. Like,
well, no, like, Hogan kills Kidman at the end of that match. Because Kidman's in that match with Vampiro, and then Hogan shows up in his charger, chases after Kidman, beats him up, throws him through a... Scoop slams him through a table, which I've never seen before.
Yeah.
And then he's going to go kill Bischoff.
Yeah, when he goes to find Bischoff, and he wanders around. But then the cops come, they pull a bunch of guns on him, and it goes to the crowd for some reason.
Yeah, because I think the camera guy gets, oh, we can
show that. You know what? I think it was supposed to be like, oh, this is real. So they cut away. That's what I thought they were supposed to be doing.
Well, I think so, because Tony Schiavone was like, being like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
Which is like, what are they going to, like, I know Hogan's tan, but he's not black. He's gonna be okay. And they're gonna shoot him a bunch of times.
Orange Lives Matter.
Yeah. So, and then it ended up with Hogan kind of being like arrested and even pulled out, and like the show being
like it's like to be black.
Yeah. People have seen that black Hogan picture. I just wrote worst. So.
This is stupid.
It's like, imagine somebody after the Brian Pillman Steve Austin thing failed in '96. That was one of the worst drawing angles they ever did. Like, and
sorry. I don't know what the hell happened. What the hell? I was on my phone and it played a video for some reason. Okay, it's off.
Yeah, the whole thing was really bad. I don't know if you talk about it, but in some like Mr. Show esque way, they had Hogan being arrested and walked by, and they were walking by Terry Funk. So for some whatever reason, I guess they didn't give him a lot of time, and for some reason they decided they needed this match too. So Terry's asking for where Skinner Norman Smiley is, and so he's going backstage and. This is all backstage, right? So the crowd's like, who knows? So Terry's just kind of...
Well, the crowd's still horrified.
Yes, of course. So Terry Funk's just wandering backstage, and there's like some, like, I guess there's an old folks home or something inside the arena. And they all said there was a mascot block or something. And Terry's just like, where's Norman Smiley? And they all point to the bathroom. Norman screams, and then they have a fight. And then... Terry Funk won. It was long, and I kind of
don't know. This thing, I enjoyed this a lot because they basically, it was very undignified, we'll say that. But at one point, Terry Funk grabs a laptop and just crushes Norman Scully with it. And Norman used to, again, this time, if you've forgotten Screaming Norman, he would just scream the whole match. He would just yell. But then Terry Funk hits him with his laptop, and he breaks the character and just goes, "Oh, God!" Like, he stops doing the scream cell and just goes, like, "Oh, Christ!" Like, like he legitimately knocked him loose. And he went, "Jesus." So then Norman gets up from that and punches Terry Funk so goddamn hard in the face that Terry Funk wobbles, and then the rest of the match, Terry never hits him hard again. So it's like Terry gets caught up, and, "Well, we're doing a hardcore match. Better beat the hell out of each other." And Norman goes, "Don't hit me that hard. Jesus."
You know what's funny is I forgot everything about this match except at one point Smiley was on a pipe, like on the ceiling, and Funk grabbed a chair and hit him with it repeatedly until he fell down into a table.
That's the exact spot. Like that was right. Like, Norman punches him as hard as he can in the side of the head to the point where you hear it, and the announcers go, "Jesus!" And then Norman climbs up on the pipe. And then when Terry gets him with a chair, it's the lightest chair shot. Hulk Hogan's never swung a lighter chair. Ric Flair's never swung a lighter chair. You've never seen anybody hit somebody lighter with a chair.
I think you forget Hulk Hogan's chair shots. They were like the lightest ones I've ever seen.
Like, it's like he was just rubbing it on his back.
Right? Yeah, but this was pretty light. Yeah, it was.
Because it's like, "Oh, shit, he punched me really hard. I better be careful. I don't want him to punch me in the head again."
All I remember, well, besides that, the other part was I saw a soda, like a soda dispenser nearby, and I was hoping, like, they would do a spot with that.
Yeah.
I thought that would be creative, like...
You throw the guy in, and the soda comes out.
Yeah.
And soda.
Yeah, because, I mean, they did a lot of stuff, but it's like, it wasn't, like, as creative as some of the WWF stuff you would see later. Or during the same time.
Yeah. And so they fight back to the ring, and then Dustin Rhodes shows up to kill Terry Funk, as you've already mentioned. And that backfires. Terry Funk wins. He's the new hardcore champion. Yay.
Yeah.
Poor Terry.
Yeah.
But then we get advertised, "If you order Springsteen, you get a mouse pad."
Yes. He held up the hardcore title for 2 seconds. Then they go to the mouse pad ad. Like really? This is like so TNA level kind of stuff where nothing sinks in. They have to go immediately to the next segment.
I loved whenever Tony would let you know how stupid he thought this all was.
Yeah.
Tony's reading this mouse pad gimmick. He's just like, "Yeah, fans, you get a mouse pad." Woo, a mouse pad.
A thing that even back then I thought was dumb. Main Idol is. Bad. But next match was Scott Steiner and Mike Awesome, which was a short match. I kind of liked that, to be honest. It was mostly like wrestling holds. Like, he was just like, Scott was using his amateur wrestling background. He kind of screwed around. He was really dominant on it. It wasn't worth it. You know, I'd go back and say it. But for a match for 3 minutes, it was mostly fine.
Yeah. And
then, see, two guys whose whole careers have mainly been throwing other people around, and then they've got to wrestle each other. That's an interesting style clash.
Yeah, but it was only 3 minutes.
Yeah,
we didn't get literally. So Scott, you know, did some cool stuff there. It was interesting, but yeah. So Scott did this kind of corner, and that was it.
No, you left out. Kevin Nash runs in to get revenge on Mike Awesome and hits him. Like, he's on the top rope, going to do the frog splash to win. And then Kevin Nash hits him with his crutch in the back, and he falls down, and then Steiner puts him in the recline.
Because if you remember that in his debut, Mike Awesome laid out Kevin Nash, so he was out here getting his revenge for what happened the Monday before. So, did they even feud?
I think that was it, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think this is it. Which was really awesome. It wasn't awesome for Awesome, but it was just...
Well, you know, he's going to get a lot
of WCW. Oh, yeah.
The career killer.
Yeah, the 70s guy.
He's going to be, eventually.
Yeah.
He goes from being the career killer to the guy whose career got killed.
Yeah.
Funny that.
Yeah. Funny how it works out for everybody by the end of this year.
You know what didn't, like, yeah. So, alright, so then I don't even know how to explain the next match. I don't know. It's hot. Let's, alright, Brian, go through Sting and Vampiro.
To be honest, I wrote, like, nothing on this match, because it was, like, I was, like, so, like, what's the word, like, desensitized to the show. It was, like, whatever. They did moves.
Yeah, this is
it was a moves match. There's, like, no psychology to it. It was just, like, they did a bunch of moves, and Sting eventually won with the Scorpion.
Well, the thing I thought about this match is that most of it was just Sting beating the shit out of Vampiro. And just hitting him one after one, and it's like the whole theory of Russo being in charge was that, well, we got to push these young guys, we got to put these young guys in matches. And then if you look through this show, young guys in matches, you know, younger new talent, just got steamrolled in every match against a big guy. Like Kidman gets crushed by Hogan, Booker gets beat by Sting, the Mamalukes get beat 4-on-2, like with a 4-on-2 advantage, get beat by Ric Flair in a shirt and Lex Luger. Like, it's just, you get run over, and in this match, Vampiro just gets run over by Sting, who hits him with the double finisher. He hits him with the death drop, then puts him in the death lock, so you make sure that he also gives up.
Yeah.
And, that was like my only real takeaway from this match is like your idea is to push young guys. You're doing a real hell of a job of it. Pushing them into a river, I say.
Yeah. I mean, that's always WCW though. They always want to push the new guys, but they don't know how, so they make the old guys win. that's like the theme. That's like the theme of the show.
Yeah, old guys win.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, if the way that but yeah, it's just like, well, how about someone runs in? And then
yeah.
They just eat them. But the match ended with Vampiro coming out and, like, attacking Sting from the ground. I don't remember what happened to finish
this match. Yeah, it was Sting runs him over, hits him with both of his finishers, and then Vampiro quits.
Yeah, I'm talking about the future here. Wait, yeah, someone comes from under the ground and gives the thing. Yeah, anyway, so yeah, the match was nothing. It was 5 minutes. I don't remember it. But I wish I didn't remember the next match.
Oh, I loved the opening, though.
Well, why don't you go through this match, then?
Well, I can't tell you much about the match, but Three Count does their thing. Two-thirds of Three Count. I don't know where the courageous one was. It was just Shannon Warren and Sugar Shane. And they're lip-syncing to their song, and there's this one lady in the audience who is loving this so much. And she is the most, like, late 90s-looking person you've ever seen in your life. And fell in love. So, the match starts, and it's going to be two-thirds of Three Count versus Crowbar, Lash LaRue, Prince, and Hoovy, and they're all, and Candido, all individually wrestling each other for the Cruiserweight title. And a bunch of bullshit happens, and then Sonny shows up, wearing
I don't know.
Like,
oh, yeah.
Wearing a sheer,
like a see-through kind of
jacket.
Thing, yeah.
And then you can see all of everything underneath. You see the bikini and the whatever. And she does something. I think she pushes somebody up.
She grabs Prince Iaukea's hair, and he, like, takes a flat back bump. It doesn't make much sense. But okay.
And then Candido wins. And so Sonny and Candido, once again, back together.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is, I hate so much. So I was happy with the finish.
I wish we could have gotten to see more of Candido and Sonny together because they were a great act together, especially in Smoky Mountain Wrestling.
Yeah. This was WCW.
I think Sonny's talked about how she thought that WCW was all a bunch of idiots who didn't know how to do anything. And they wasted her and Candido. So I can't remember what even happened to them, but I'm assuming it's bad.
I think they got fired a few months later because of alleged drug stuff.
did you fire somebody in 2000 WCW for drug stuff?
Yeah.
That's alleged.
Who knows what really happened?
That better been something serious, because there was some serious bad shit going on.
Yeah.
CW, so.
Yeah, we should. Yeah. You have to be, like, really messed up.
Steiner threatened to murder someone. That's a reminder. Steiner threatened to murder someone and got a new contract for
it. Remember what happened to Juventud Guerrera and how he got fired? It takes a lot to get fired for WCW.
So maybe Cam Dudo and Sonny were really out of control psychos.
Maybe. I mean, who knows? They both said they were... I mean, like, I don't know, like, if Sonny has said it, but I think Chris has said that he wasn't really... that clean until, like, the TNA run. I think that's what he said.
Yeah, but, anyway, yeah, so that ended, and then Tammy and Booker T's wife, they fought. And in 2000, early 2000 style, the men freaked out. Like, it was sexy.
Yeah.
And it was, like, I don't know.
Like, 1985 Dallas wrestling all over again.
I never really understood the sexiness of the cat. I guess because they're touching each other. I mean, yeah, that's like whatever. It's 2015. It's the day of the internet, man.
With
like crazy porn and terrorists. Like, man, like I'm desensitized, man. But anyway, Jeff Jarrett was backstage saying, you know.
He cut like the same promo every time in WCW. Like, there's no change to it. He's the chosen one. He says something about slap nuts. That's like the entire promo.
I've been trying to read Jerry Jarrett's book about the development of TNA, but I keep stopping because it's so damn depressing. Because Jerry Jarrett has all these like, oh man, this is gonna be so great. This is going to go so well, and I love my son, and we're going to do great work together. And then knowing how it goes,
yeah.
It's just, oh, Jesus, Jerry. Oh, God, stop now. But one of the things he brings up is that when they first started TNA, like, they did an interview with Russo because Jeff wanted to bring in Russo to be a writer, and Russo does this long speech about how Southerners can't be ass-kickers. So we're going to have to spend a year getting Jeff Jarrett with the audience before they'll believe he can kick anybody's ass. And in the meantime, we'll build around the Ultimate Warrior. And then after a year, Jeff Jarrett will finally be credible, and then we can make him the top guy. And then Jarrett looks over at Jeff and goes, see what I told you? He's an idiot.
Yeah.
He's an idiot, and he hates Southern people, and he's always promoted you as a goof. He's always made you a clown. And it's like, yeah, Jerry's right. He's a total clown. And I don't know why Jeff didn't understand that.
Wait, he wanted to put the Ultimate Warrior on top?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Ultimate Warrior was supposed to come in for the first TNA show. And then he fell through. And they had to use Shamrock instead. Yep.
No comment.
Yep.
Future is now.
Yeah.
And that was who Russo was pushing for, was the Ultimate Warrior.
Why?
Because he's in WWF, yo.
Yeah.
Bro.
Hey, when you have a run like Ultimate Warriors in 1990, you can have a career in wrestling like forever. You know?
Yeah.
And, if you were WWF champion in 1990, you could be a draw anywhere.
Well, I don't know if you'd be a draw, but somebody will think you are.
Not a draw. Yeah, you could. People would think you're a draw. That's what, you know what, same with Russo. That's why Russo has had so yeah. many opportunities, because he was the writer when Stone Cold Steve Austin and The Rock got over.
So, well, he must have done it. So
yeah.
Give him another shot. I don't know how much he really helped Steve Austin.
He
definitely helped The Rock, because The Rock it's been proven clear that The Rock is a guy who does what you're telling him to do.
Rock had the charisma to get over no matter what, though.
Yeah, The Rock can make anything work, but he's definitely a scripted guy.
Yeah.
He wants to be scripted. He wants you to write for him. And that's all fine. Like, The Rock is what WWE thinks every superstar should be, and none of them can do that.
Yeah.
But Steve Austin and Mick Foley and The Undertaker, no, those guys just did their thing.
Yeah.
Yep. So that match sucked.
Yep. And back to this show. This is a
back to other thing that sucked. Speaking of suck, Buff Bagwell was in another match. The only thing good is that we got two Lex Luger entrances. So these are all the three championship matches. I didn't really write a lot of results. I just wrote fuck finish three times.
Yeah.
So get ready for that.
This match made me think, has there ever been a worse group of wrestlers than guys who were supposed to be main eventers in the early 2000s, who were like the young generation coming up? Because all of them were terrible. Buff Bagwell, Sean O'Hare, we'll get to him. He was supposed to be a top-notch guy, like Chuck Palumbo. Like, all the guys who should have been taking spots in this time period.
They never got anywhere.
All of them fucked. I mean, that's why when you're looking around at 2004, it's Triple H in WWE main eventing against, like, Kevin Nash again.
Yeah.
Or, like, let's try Goldberg. Because everybody who's supposed to be the guys, but they all are terrible. This is maybe the worst period in wrestling history.
Well, it's WCW, yeah.
But, like, WWE was developing a ton of guys, though, were they?
You know, that's true. In OVW, they had, like, guys like Batista, but he was, like, doing the Leviathan gimmick and wasn't getting over that much.
Like all the guys who ended up being major main eventers are guys who started in, like, 2001,
2002. Yeah. Brock Lesnar, John Cena.
98-99, who should have been moving into those main event spots.
Yeah.
Every one of them flopped.
Yeah.
And so they had to rely on guys like the Jericho and Benoit era guys. And it's like, this is our new talent. But it's like, oh, they're not that new. They've been on TV for like 5-6 years.
Yeah.
Also, I found it really funny that, because the New Blood's supposed to be you guys, but like Shane Douglas is in it, and like Buff Bagwell.
They were like 35.
Yeah, so basically the New Blood is everybody who's not over.
Shane Douglas was like in WCW in the 80s. Like,
yeah, Bagwell's been in WCW since, like, 91. Like, they're not, like, really real new guys. They're like the upper mid-carders who never made main events, so now they're, like, new blood. Because if they're main eventers, then they're finally, like, moving up the card.
At least with Buff, I kind of half got it. Because they were like, okay, he was just a guy in the background. Now he's been pushed, so he's a new blood of guys. Whatever. Anyway, the match sucked. Like, so a bunch of run-ins happened, and then Vince Russo like put on a referee shirt, and now he magically became a referee. That's how it works.
Yeah.
And then he counted the win for Shane Douglas and Buff Bagwell, and that was great. This is the longest match of the whole thing, and it ended with that.
But like, this is the thing. Like, Russo's trying to recreate all the WWF stuff, and now he's basically made himself Vince McMahon on-screen character.
Yeah.
In WWF, whenever they had the thing where like Vince would become the referee or whatever to screw the baby faces, babyface always won.
Yeah.
Like, Austin always won. Here, Russo's guys have got to win. Because Russo's a dork who thinks, oh, the heel's winning, that's cool. Wrestling fans like it when the heels win. No, they don't! They want to see the good guys win!
I did in 95, but I was like, hey.
Like, oh my god. Like, he never moved out of, like, being a dork, hardcore wrestling fan.
He never changed with the times. He never did. He always thought that
the stuff that they did worked. Like, people like seeing Steve Austin overcome all these odds.
Yes.
They wouldn't have wanted to see Vince McMahon just steamroll everybody with the corporation.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, The Rock and Steve Austin got over because they won a lot of matches, and they are charismatic enough that people like them. I mean, there's nobody here in WCW, and then the heels just kept winning. I mean, it's just like a great way to get nobody over and a great way to have people, like, not interested in the least bit.
Yeah, especially when your heels gimmick is guys who aren't popular.
Yeah.
Like, guys the fans don't really like.
Hey, man, Shane Douglas, man, he's cool.
But, oh, man, he's Shane Douglas is really technically sound. Look at him win a match with a belly-to-belly.
I don't remember one thing he did in this match.
Huh? I don't remember the match.
Me neither.
Other than Lex Luger was the best guy in it again.
I remember Ric Flair was still wrestling in his street clothes for some reason. he doesn't have gear anymore. Like what happened there?
He doesn't care.
Nothing makes you look more out of shape than when you're not wearing your regular gear.
Yeah.
Like you might be fine, but if you just wear your regular gear, people, their minds will, remember what you used to look like. But if you're out there dressed like an idiot or, trying to cover up, they go, oh, he must be a fatty now.
Mm-hmm.
So. What I'm saying is Tenryu did the right thing wearing his trunks. Hey, everybody.
Mm-hmm. So that match sucked. I also wrote that the name was what it was. Next match, with Scott Steiner versus Sting. Guess what? It kind of sucked. I don't really even know how to explain the match. There wasn't really anything memorable in it. They kind of fought for a few minutes, and then...
Vampiro dragged him down to hell. Then he came back, and apparently in hell, all that really happens is, you kind of get a bloody lip. So Sting came back up, and he was, just a bloody lip, and then I forget there's even a finish. I didn't put down the finish.
Steiner
put him in the recliner, and Sting submitted.
Yep.
And so there's your new United States champion, Steinerized.
Yep.
Steinerized.
So fuck finish. My notes were accurate.
Can we talk about how similar Steinerized sounds to sodomized? Or should we just move on?
I think we'll move on.
Okay. Another fuck finish. Alright.
Yeah. Sodomy.
Yeah. Explain this 15 minute.
I actually enjoyed it pretty good because I think Jeff Jarrett's a good worker. And especially in this point in his career, he obviously in TNA he gets a little bit older and he can't do as much. But I thought this was pretty good.
Once they went into the ring, it was alright. They brawled for a long time.
Yep, kind of liked it a little bit. Everything's kind of going fine until all the bullshit starts.
Yeah.
Which is again, the tragic history of Jeff Jarrett is that he just never got that people, that the reason why people didn't get into his stuff is not because he's not a good worker. It's because he's horribly booked, but then he surrounded himself with the booker who did the horrible booking of him. It's a Shakespearean tragedy. But anyway, Kimberly's sort of the story is that Jeff Jarrett hit Kimberly with a guitar, but on a Nitro or a Thunder or some bullshit, and so DDP's like, "Huh, Kimberly's gonna kick your ass." Kind of similar to what he ended up doing with Undertaker and Sarah a year later, but he's Kimberly slaps Jeff Jarrett during the match, and Jeff can't get her because she's a lady. And then Eric Bischoff walks down, and then, whose side's Eric on? We all know he's best friends with DDP, only we don't know that because we're not all newsletter subscribers.
Yes.
And it's Bischoff's helping Paige! What's this? And then it's a 15-minute mark. Kimberly comes into the ring with the guitar, and she's going to hit Jeff. You just know it.
She hit
DDP.
Swerve.
And then Jeff Jarrett wins the world title. And this match features one of the all-time bad Eric Bischoff interferences, although I think they were all bad because his idea of interfering is to get up on the apron and then just grab the ref's head and hold it. if you've ever seen the ill-fated Hogan Warrior match from WCW, he does the same thing, and he just holds the guy for 10 minutes while, interference happens. And then finally, when it's over, he lets him go and go, okay, you can go back to doing whatever you want to. And it's just utterly ridiculous, but Kimberly's new blood.
Yeah.
Kimberly's new blood. I think on a previous show, Brian, you mentioned that every DDP storyline is his best friend turns on him. Or his wife.
That was Sting. It's just Sting.
That's true about Sting, but I think you mentioned in one of the other shows that, over the last year, DDP's best friends turned on him, then his wife turned on him, and then Arquette turns on him.
That's true.
Oh, God.
Oh, yeah, this hadn't happened yet. Yeah.
Like, DDP's one storyline is that nobody likes him. All of his loved ones hate him.
Yeah.
Has Canyon turned on him yet?
I don't think so.
I couldn't remember if positively Canyon was a Russo first run or Russo second run thing.
I think second.
Okay. So that's coming.
Because I remember DDP threw him off that triple cell, and he did that big bump, and he was gone for like months. It's like 2001.
But before they did the bump, like Asia stepped in the hole, and like everybody went, "Oh, it's Jimmy." Oh, something's gonna happen there.
That sounds like WCW. Sure as hell does.
Just a stupid big muscle woman screws up their big spot. Well, let's do it anyway.
Yeah, so that's basically what happened. Kimberly decided to screw over her husband for no reason.
Because we all know from the newsletters that Eric Bischoff and her are wife swappers, and she's left DDP for Eric.
Yeah,
we all know that, don't we?
Yeah, because they did hint it on like Nitro the next day, but like it's still like what? Yeah, it's based on.
It's based on a DVDR thread.
Yeah, so it just seems to a regular viewer like me, I didn't read it, but I wasn't in the newsletter or anything, where it's just like, I guess the Eric Bischoff decided that he wanted to fuck Kimberly. And he had that giant smile on his face when it happened. He's like, yeah, and the camera like zoomed right in on his face, and he's like,
he's zoomed in on the hugging.
This is part of the grand Russo tradition of women are terrible, and they will always cheat you out of everything you do.
Yeah, that was like his gift for every woman in WCW.
Yeah, poor Mrs. Russo.
Yeah.
I don't know what she did to betray. Like, but it's very Tommy Wiseau.
Something happened to Russo in his childhood, like somebody stood him up, and he's never forgiven her. Now every woman has to be like the girl that dumped him. That's like my thought of it.
I just think he had a future wife who left him for his best friend, and left him on his birthday.
Yeah.
What is that?
Very sad stuff. And then of course the pay-per-view ended with all the heels going and cheering in the ring, because that always makes everyone happy. You tune in.
Exact opposite.
Or to know why the heels are better.
It's the exact opposite of every Vince McMahon booking theory, which is that you always want to send people home happy, unless like you're going to have like the one step in the story before that. But since we all have the benefit of the hindsight, knowing we're never going to get the happy moment. The fans are never going to get sent home happy.
Well, that used to be his mentality. These days, it's like I'm kind of like shocked when there's a pay-per-view finish that I actually like.
Well, I think the issue now is that Vince doesn't understand who the fans actually want to see, so he struggles with the whole sending them home happy bit, but I think he's trying to send them home happy, he just doesn't know how.
Yeah, I know, I completely believe that. That's the problem. It being stupid, it's almost worse. Vince isn't stupid, he's not stupid. He's very smart at other things.
But with Russo, he thinks that the point is to, like, make everybody mad constantly.
Yeah, because as long as you're it's one of those things where as long as you're in age, it doesn't matter. But guess what? It did matter. And it got worse. And next time when we look at WCW, it will be definitely worse. Maybe the worst, as a lot of people think, where, you know, they're not going to take it. We're not
going to. Oh, is this happening? Oh, boy.
We're not going to take it anymore.
Yes. And we'll deal with that. But I think, outside of that, any final thoughts of the show before we call it a show?
I don't think so.
Nope. It's a bad show.
I think the big takeaway for me is that they still had talent. It still could have been fixed. We still could have fixed this. And I even think their idea of who to push wasn't all that bad. I mean, I think Kidman was a bad choice, but they're going to be building the company around Booker T and Scott Steiner and DDP and maybe a few of those. Like maybe DDP's a little too old and maybe Scott Steiner's a little too unreliable, but in general, I think, those are the guys you should pick.
You know what? They did go with that later this year, and it wasn't that bad. The problem was nobody cared by then.
but, like, yeah, their ideas of who is the talent that they should be pushing, it's pretty close to what I think is the logical thing to be pushing, but
yeah.
They just have no idea how. This is just complete and total incompetence of how to run a wrestling company.
Yeah.
Yep. And,
that's
all pretty much agree. It was funny, but, you know, the rise of Stein is happening. That's all that matters.
The rise of Booker T is about to come, and Lance Storm's debut has got to be right around the corner, isn't it?
Yeah, it's pretty soon. Yeah.
So that'll be something to look
at. Actually, I think it was during this tag team title tournament. I think.
Okay.
So we'll be seeing him soon.
We'll figure it out. I think we may even, I may force a hand in maybe watching Ready to Rumble. Just to prepare for next month.
Oh, God.
Next month's show.
We'll
see how it goes. But until then, you know, I think we're just gonna roll up in a ball and just kind of cry a bit thinking about this show.
I was in a real good mood until we went over this show.
Yeah. This show sucked.
Life's a shit sandwich. You gotta take a bite. And with that, we'll call it a show.
You know what you could do though, Brad? You could play that Own Son song. That's your man.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's a good one. Just think of it in your head, man. I'm not playing shit.
Oh,
except
nice.
Maybe Dragon Age. I gotta kick out a guy for not liking me. He doesn't like me, Brad, for no reason. Screw that guy, I'm gonna murder him. Exile him forever. Girlfriend's not gonna like it, don't care. But with that, we're gonna call it a show, and we'll, the mystery next week. Who knows what's going on? Maybe talk about music. I don't know.
Oh, maybe.
Figure it out.
Yeah.
We'll think about something. We'll talk about something. So that's the show, episode 12 in the bank. For Dan Ford and Brian Rose, I'm Brad, and we'll see you next week.
Play it, Owenson.